Sandy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan. I love your work.
I love you.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Knowledge Fight. I'm Dan.
I'm Jordan.
We're a couple dudes. Like to sit around, drink novelty beverages, and talk a little bit about Alex Jones.
Indeed we are, Dan.
Jordan.
Dan?
Jordan.
How do you feel about international competitions? Do you root for the United States? You know,
not,
like in the Olympics?
Not
and...
always, but I'm always thrilled when the United States does well. You
yeah.
know, like, especially when it's camaraderie-based.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like... crushing other countries. Like when it's not actually feel, when it doesn't feel like war, then
yeah.
yeah, I can always feel a little yeah. bit of national pride.
Yeah.
But I remember when I was younger, I guess, I don't know what years it would have been, but it was around when like Thierry Henry and Zinedine Zidane
oh,
were around.
Oh man.
Head I was button, a fan of the French.
Zidane.
I liked the French.
Headbutton asshole
World
Zidane.
World Cup team, yeah. I don't know why. I think my brother was into the French team.
Uh-huh.
He was much more into soccer than I was, so I think I kind of took a little bit by osmosis from him.
Yeah.
And then I studied French in high school, so I always had like a little bit of a little je ne sais quoi
yeah,
about
yeah, yeah.
The culture
and
a little connection.
Affinity. Yeah,
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
I was a Francophile.
Yeah.
So like I could cheer for them even if they were against the United States.
Right.
I could see myself endorsing another team. I'm not,
yeah.
You know, I'm not one of these USA or bust guys, but I also appreciate it. I know you're bringing this up because the women's,
they won!
Yeah, congratulations.
And revenue, she kicked ass!
Yeah,
it was
absolutely.
Awesome.
Yeah, I feel very, very thrilled for our country
yeah.
and the women's team. Congratulations on a back to back, man.
Oh
that's,
yeah.
That's
yeah.
great.
I remember, I don't watch football at all, but
you mean soccer or football?
Yes, soccer.
Okay.
Actually,
just
I don't
clarify.
Watch. I don't watch either anymore. But I got so into the 2015 women's national team World Cup win, like it was intense. And so ever since then, I watch the shit out of women's soccer internationally when I can.
I would say that probably this is a little bit fucked up. To nah, it's not fucked up, but
yeah.
like it's weird to admit, but like. Probably the sport I watch most is pro wrestling.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah
I don't
yeah.
even watch a ton of pro wrestling anymore or regularly, but the little amount of other sports I
yeah.
watch
yeah, yeah.
is eclipsed.
You're
by
not a huge sports guy.
Yeah, and I don't see. I don't know if there's a ton of international competition in pro wrestling.
Yeah, unless it's in Saudi Arabia.
But that that Iran versus Saudi Arabia thing was not well
yeah.
played.
Yeah, that wasn't great.
Poorly done, WWE. So, Jordan, this is a podcast where I know a lot about international competition and Alex Jones.
And I only know a lot about the first one, second one not so much.
Jordan, today we have a very interesting episode to go over. We are going to be talking about July 5th, 2019, which
right.
is a present-day episode.
Right.
I want to say one thing very clearly. I have gotten a lot of feedback from listeners that are expressing a sentiment that this is too much Alex Jones in a row. We need a wacky Wednesday break.
Yeah.
And
yeah, yeah.
I empathize.
And
I
you've
understand.
Gotten that from me.
Yes, absolutely. Listeners and you and
yeah.
the voice in my head.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Absolutely. I understand that and I feel it. I absolutely do.
Mm-hmm.
One of the considerations though is that there's a lot going on in Alex's world right now. It's it takes a lot of attention that's required. You got to focus on this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
One of the other issues is that it's a time suck. Like if I check in on something as a potential Wacky Wednesday thing, and I listen to like 2 hours of somebody talk, and like this isn't good, this
yeah.
doesn't work,
yeah, yeah,
then
yeah.
that's 2 hours lost.
Right,
and that's happened a bunch.
Yeah. Well,
so,
when we have a schedule like we do, where it's,
yeah,
yeah,
it's very difficult to fit that stuff in, and I empathize. Today is a modern day Alex episode, but it'll be also a hybrid Wacky Wednesday episode.
Excellent.
So that, I think that will be satisfying for some people.
All right.
It'll all become very clear what I mean, as we get into this. But before we do, Jordan, I gotta take a moment to say thank you to some people who have signed up and are supporting the show. I really appreciate it, and I completely forgot to give any shout-outs on the
yeah,
last episode.
Yeah, I noticed that halfway through, and I couldn't bring it up.
Yep, so we're behind. First, Andrew, thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you, Andy.
Thank you, Andrew.
Next, Candace, thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you, Candy.
Thank you, Candace.
Next, Spencer, thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you, Spence.
Yeah! Thanks, Spence.
Next, Zach. Thank you so much. You're now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thanks, Zach.
Thank you, Space Command. Zach.
Could be. Alex's secret source.
Could be.
Then finally, I got to say thank you to somebody who donated on an elevated level. We appreciate it very much. So, Drew, thank you so much. You are now a technocrat.
I'm a policy wonk.
Crikey, mate, that's fantastic. Have yourself a brew.
How's your 401k doing, bro?
All right, we got to go full tilt boogie on this, Watson, all right? Let's just get down to business. We ain't making that money off that heroin. Why are you pimp so good? My neck is freakishly large. I declare info war on you.
Thank you so much, Drew.
Thank you very much, Drew.
If you're out there listening and you're thinking, hey, I'd like to support the show, I like what these guys do, please feel free to do so by going to our website, knowledgefight.com. There's a button that says support the show. We would appreciate it.
It would be lovely.
So, Jordan, July 5th, 2019, day after the 4th.
Day after Independence Day. We've already got tanks rolling through the Capitol.
Alex had predicted that Antifa was going to commit chemical warfare against all manner of conservatives.
Didn't happen.
If you're out there with your kids, they're going to blind them.
They did say that,
with magical milkshakes.
Right.
None of that has come to pass. We're recording this on Sunday, and there was a whole weekend of nonsensical bullshit. So if something pops off tonight, don't blame us for not knowing about it. It's in the future from when we're recording.
Yeah.
But the 4th of July predictions that Alex had did not come true at all.
Surprisingly.
So he's got to kind of take a different approach when he comes in.
Well, everything I said before the 4th is wrong, so...
He has to kind of ignore that that was a legitimate prediction and fear he was trying to stoke in people. And so instead of focusing on how wrong he was, he decides, I am going to go fucking hard about how great Trump's speech was on the 4th.
Oh, no.
And here is him introducing the theme that's going to develop throughout this episode.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are broadcasting worldwide on July 5th, 2019. I am your host, Alex Jones. Last night, I watched Trump's speech when they re-aired it on C-SPAN.
C-SPAN.
And it was very powerful and a confirmation of just how far we're going as a culture and a society against the globalists. And this was a exorcism against the New World Order and against the America-hating systems that want to demoralize us. This was a very Christian, very Americana, pure Western Renaissance moment. This was absolutely amazing. I am so honored by it all.
Really?
That we've come this far together, and I know a lot of you are very, very happy right now. This is a big deal. It's totally triggering the globalist. There's no way today that we're going to even be able to do justice to this. I'm going to do a whole special 36-hour broadcast, we've decided, kicking off next Wednesday.
Cool.
Just to dissect this speech and go over
the money
boom 1776 worldwide. It's all coming up at the start of the next segment. But first, proof Democrats hate America and want civil war compared to what we're trying to do. Here it is.
Okay. So I guess there is still a little bit of
civil war. All right.
It certainly de-escalated in terms of the immediacy of it.
They're coming to kill all of us. Yeah. Well, they didn't, but have you heard this speech?
It was an exorcism.
It was an exorcism.
Trump is a witch.
I must exorcise the demons.
Yeah, so that's kind of the vibe that Alex is going to be putting out, is that Trump was presiding over some sort of a pseudo-pagan Christian ritual in order to exorcise the anti-American forces.
All right, all right.
It's really fucked up if you consider, like, if you just take a step back and you forget about the fact that Alex has had the career he's had.
Right.
He's presumably someone who's read things.
Yeah.
He's legitimately up here saying Trump is doing magic. You just strip away all the other stuff. It's like, all right, man.
Yeah, you know what? I think in that regard, he really does agree with Trump. Because I'm guessing Trump thinks he's up there doing magic, too.
I think that Trump would probably not believe it as literally as Alex is presenting.
I don't know.
Like, I got the magic in me or something like that.
At this point, I don't know, man. All bets are off.
Yeah, who knows. So in this next clip, Alex brings up one of the reasons that he believes that Trump and Melania were aware that this was a magical ritual they were conducting.
All right.
And that is that they were super emotional. We'll
Oh, boy. That's
the
flimsy.
C-SPAN 2 shot was a different mix of cameras. It was closer up on Melania and Trump's faces. And I've got to get that.
I need those faces.
Because Trump almost broke down crying three times. And you could see him gulping back. Never seen his body language.
Did a psychopath do that?
Melania was on fire.
She did get lit on fire.
Like some angelic queen. And was radiating Americana and the love of the country. And they know exactly what they're doing.
This is silly.
This is literally a ritual of bringing Christianity back into America and love of our nation and love of our people and unity, the exact opposite of what the globalists are saying and what the globalists are doing.
Sure.
I watched some of the videos that Alex was pointing to where he's like, Trump is about to cry. He just looks confused.
Yeah. He's a confused old man.
But that's the Rorschach test that is Trump's face.
Right.
Alex can see almost crying. I can see sundowning.
Right.
It's all kind of, similar visually.
You know, when I think angelic, beauty and love towards America, I think of a woman who wore a jacket that said, I don't care, on the back of it.
Right.
That's what I think of. Nothing is more godly than not giving a shit about the death of the poor.
Alex might think that is Americana.
That's true. That actually might be true.
So he might not be internally inconsistent. I can find no evidence of them crying. There might have been something that appeared to be tears, but that might have been the rain.
Yeah.
I find this, like, you before the clip started, you said this is flimsy. I agree.
Yeah.
Flimsy. Flimsy as shit.
A light way of putting it.
Yeah. But, I mean, Alex really goes hard on this narrative. It is all a religious ritual, and he just beats it into his audience's head.
I saw not a power trip. Not someone loving that crowd of people there, but I saw Trump in the office of president with his wife turning the tide with all those people together in a huge ritual.
I'm going to go with the first two.
The headlines on Infowars.com. Trump successfully performs exorcism against the globalist and the left. In fact, let's pull up the exact headline if we can.
So this is crazy on a couple levels, because the first thing is Alex is reporting that this was an exorcism against the left.
And
then the second thing that's crazy is that it's now being reported as successful.
So
not only is this a magical ritual, but it worked.
So how would you know it worked? Especially on the 5th.
I would say if you're just making it up. I would say that that's a pretty good way you could be confident in your reporting.
Well, I mean, maybe what he's saying is that they were demon possessed, and now everybody that was a globalist was woken up.
But show me one person.
Janet Reno?
I don't know if she's a globalist. I mean, I'm sure she is. Why did I protest? So one of the things that Alex is talking about being these forces that need exercising, he gets into them a little bit. And this is probably the only point of the episode that I think is like, this isn't what I want to cover. Mm-hmm. The rest of this is going to be really fun, but he's got to yell about like drag queen story time and Pride Parade a little bit.
Boo.
And I only even include these clips, because of a specific thing that he's saying about them, that I think needs, to be, you know, push back on a little bit. Otherwise, it would just be like, "Hey, he's talking shit again. Let's ignore it."
Yeah.
I have scores of articles with them now admitting that at Drag Queen Storytime, sponsored by NAMBLA, children are mounted on top men and hump the men.
What?
We have videos and photos of this. At gay pride parades, they hump children now.
He's just making this up. Drag Queen Storytime is not sponsored by NAMBLA. I would be surprised if NAMBLA sponsors anything.
I don't think
in 2019.
Yeah, I don't think they even, other than
they don't really
Jeffrey
exist.
Epstein's defense team.
Yeah, they don't exist as a actual organization that has any
real
formal structure to it at all.
Yeah, who's the CEO of NAMBLA, Dan?
There might actually be somebody.
Oh,
that might actually exist. But
that might? They don't have a CFO, I'll tell you that right
Probably
now.
Probably not. So Alex there at the end is saying that like they just grew up kids at Pride.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, that's really fucked up. That I don't think that's true. And I was wondering where he was getting this from.
Yeah.
And he gives me a clue in this next clip.
We have videos and photos of this. At gay pride parades, they hump children now. And you're like, well, that's insane. In Europe, they have sex with the children in public.
Fuck off.
So many of them did it just 2 weeks ago at gay pride parades in two European cities. The police couldn't do anything because it was mayors and others openly having sex with the children in mass rebellion.
I really don't think that's true.
You don't?
I really don't think that's true.
Oh, that's interesting.
I think I would have heard more about that if two European cities had mayors fucking kids outside.
Yeah, that's a completely made up thing Alex is saying to demonize the LGBTQ community. It's become an incredibly common occurrence on this show to hear Alex say shit like this that's just completely not true. But it hits the ear fresh and offensive nonetheless because of the scale of what he's lying about. Alex is repeating talking points from the far right in a fascist smear campaign coming out of Europe, which these attacks have been directed against the LGBTQ community in recent weeks. This traces back to backlash from a recent pride parade held in Warsaw. And as we discussed in the episode where we covered Stefan Molyneux going to Poland to become a white nationalist, Warsaw and Poland is not the chillest place in the world right now for non-heterosexual white dudes.
Nope.
Jarosław Kaczynski, the head of the Law and Justice Party and the power behind the Polish president at the moment, he is labeled the LGBTQ rights movement a foreign import and a threat.
Right.
Just before the Pride Parade, a far-right journalist from Poland called for people to shoot on LGBTQ activists.
That's not good.
But he was quick to point out that he didn't mean it literally, and then he compared Pride Parade organizers to Nazis. According to The Independent, quote, some town council leaders have also made a point of saying that their municipality is LGBT-free in recent months. There is a real negative trend that you're seeing from the far right in Poland.
Yeah, yeah.
The environment in Poland is not good from a political perspective right now. From articles that I've read and information I've found, it does appear that socially the population is trending towards greater acceptance and support for LGBTQ folk, but that's caused a harsh backlash from the far right ruling party.
That's a surprise.
Part of that backlash has been attacking Warsaw Mayor Rafał Raziskowski for participating in the Warsaw Pride Parade, and for saying, quote, not everyone has to go to Equality Parade, but everyone should respect minority rights. It's really important for me that Warsaw be open and Warsaw be tolerant. That is a sentiment that is in direct opposition to the far-right agenda in Poland. And so to attack the rising tide of public acceptance of LGBTQ rights, they've launched a public campaign to portray the demands of equality as actually being an attack on families and an attempt to sexualize children. So weird to see bigots across the world, from Warsaw to Austin, coming up with the exact same smears and narratives, almost like they're working out of the exact same playbook.
It's like, wait a second. Did Poland get invaded by the Nazis, or were they Nazis secretly the whole fucking time?
I don't know. Why don't you write a blog about it?
I think I will.
The day after the march, a March for Life and the Family was held in 130 towns in Poland. The march had been held in previous years to protest abortion, but this year it was co-opted by this anti-LGBTQ momentum, and it made its theme, quote, protecting children from premature sexualization. All of this is absolutely what Alex is lying about and embellishing when he says that a mayor in Europe was having sex with children in the street. That is Alex knowing that his audience is full of dumb bigots who will accept his version of the story when in reality, the mayor of Warsaw just expressed support for the Pride Parade. That is what he is embellishing and lying about. And this is why I never accept those arguments that people make that it's like, Alex is just an over-the-top guy leading you to the truth.
Yeah.
They're like, he is just like, he wakes you up out of your slumber by being hyperbolic.
Right.
He literally said that a mayor is having sex with children in Europe.
Yep.
What he is embellishing is a mayor expressing support for a pride parade.
Yep.
That is not leading you to the truth.
No.
That is leading you towards accepting far-right fascist smears coming out of Europe in service of dehumanizing, delegitimizing, and oppressing LGBTQ individuals who are just trying to accept or be accepted. It's not a trivial issue.
No.
So that's it for Alex's sort of
piece of shittery.
No.
But
the stuff that's like, ugh.
Yeah.
But in this next clip, Alex gets back to talking about how Trump's 4th of July speech was a ritual, but then he kind of goes off the rails.
I haven't hit the ritual Trump conducted yet, and I'm going to do it next segment.
What? he knows what ritual.
Come hook or crook. But it was absolutely incredible. Absolutely insane.
Mm. I agree.
That they're attacking it, and it just really shows you the two different sides here. Crystal clear, and confirms sure everything does. We always knew about the left. They want our guns. They hate our country. They want to have sex with our children. They're just evil. And History shows that you go through these periods. We're going to go to break. This is the last few days of the Save InfoWars 4th of July mega special.
Okay.
The last few days are the day after.
Mega special. Save InfoWars.
Yeah.
So when we talk about the idea that Alex is hyperbolic in order to wake people up and that being complete bullshit, you see here, the thing that he is being hyperbolic about and the thing that he is exaggerating, which is they want to fuck your kids, he then turns around and uses as an introduction for his sales pitch about why he needs to keep existing to fight back against this imaginary bullshit that he has exaggerated to make you scared of, to make you worried about.
Right.
This is a very easy game to figure out if you'll just pay attention to the structure of his show. Now, one of the things about Alex is that he knows a lot about history.
He knows a lot about lore.
Well, history is lore, so you...
I see you.
He knows a lot about real stuff, for sure. Mm. I'm trying to find a better way to phrase this, but I'm just going to have to let it slide.
Yeah. He has a lovely imagination.
Oh, sure. And what he likes to imagine is the left getting mad about things. That seems to be something he obsesses about.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, he doesn't understand what the things that he thinks anger the liberals are.
Yeah, that sounds right.
It's pretty clearly demonstrated by this next clip.
You can see how much they love seeing America come back from the dead and stopping the demoralization of the people. So let's start rolling Battle Hymn of the Republic, a Christian song triggering the left massively.
All
right, ooh, that was bad.
That's enough of that. It's really funny that Alex thinks that the Battle Hymn of the Republic is somehow going to trigger libs, or that it's in any way in line with his distorted version of Christianity or even American history. For one thing, the song itself is just a new set of lyrics that were written in 1861 and set to a pre-existing tune from the song John Brown's Body, which itself was based on a folk song whose precise origins are a matter of dispute. A good many scholars have argued that it has its roots in African-American communities in the pre-Civil War South.
Hmm. Do you mean like most music? Or at least good?
Both John Brown's Body and the Battle Hymn of the Republic are strongly abolitionist songs. John Brown's Body was sung exclusively by Union soldiers, and it was decidedly anti-Confederacy, as evidenced by the lyrics, quote, "They will hang Jeff Davis to a sour apple tree," and, quote, "Now three rousing cheers for the Union."
Not bad.
Pretty overt.
It's a little bit obvious, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm glad they changed the lyrics and we're not still singing the song that's like, we're gonna hang him, man.
Hang Jefferson Davis from a sour apple tree.
We're gonna do it.
The Battle Hymn of the Republic was written by Julia Ward Howe, someone who Alex would absolutely have called
a woman?
An SJ dub if he was around in the 1800s.
Nah!
She was decidedly a dedicated abolitionist and wrote her song specifically to give a more cleaned up version of John Brown's Body to rally the Union Army to defeat the Confederacy. After the Civil War, Howe dedicated herself to the battle for women's suffrage, putting her squarely on the right side of history on two important issues of her time.
I'm so triggered.
Though her version was a little bit less overt, and didn't include the part about hanging Confederate President Jefferson Davis,
which maybe is true,
it was still pretty clearly anti-Confederate. One verse in particular stands out. Quote, "In the beauty of the lilies, Christ was born across the sea, with a glory in his bosom that transfigures you and me. As he died to make men holy, let us die to make men free, while God is marching on." The only people who should be triggered by the playing of the Battle Hymn of the Republic are people like Alex, whose family fought for the Confederacy. This song is literally about killing his family members who took up arms to defend slavery. I don't think that people who don't know about the song's histories would be that triggered by it either. I feel like most people who don't really think about it all that much just kind of accept it as a patriotic classic that gets brought out every time we have an America fetishizing holiday.
I used to play it in the marching band every year.
I think most people kind of, it rolls off them like, whatever.
Yeah. Still doing that, huh?
Anybody who knows anything about the history of the song would know like that these are specifically abolitionist songs.
Right.
I don't know.
Let's kill the slave owners.
Right. Let's fuck up Alex's great grandfather.
Yeah, exactly. That would be so funny if he did happen to be in the song.
Alex legitimately believes that he is his ancestors.
Yes.
He has that idea that like, your ancestors live on through you. So his Confederate ancestors are him.
Right.
That song is legitimately
still trying to kill him. It is the only reason we keep singing it is because it has followed his family through
if
him.
If anybody should hate that song, it's him.
Absolutely.
That's the only, reason to hate that song.
And because he's his ancestors, the wound should still be fresh.
Absolutely.
You know, he's still bitter about that song.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I think he's just talking shit about the battle hymn of the Republic, but that is par for the course.
Right.
In this next clip, Alex gets really weird. And sort of, these are the kind of clips I really enjoy seeing. This is Alex adding a new layer to his past history, that makes him into just a big old hero. I don't think I've heard him bring this up before. I think he might have brought this up if this was something that was true.
Yeah.
I think this is just a retcon.
While he was selling oil paintings, he tackled a would-be mugger?
Nope. But okay. I'm sure he did.
Yeah.
This is a spiritual war, ladies and gentlemen. And, you know, I used to think I was crazy when I was a little kid.
You were.
Yeah.
Because you don't really call it the visions. It's just a knowing. And of a job you've got to do. And then never even, as you get older, even thinking about what you thought when you were a kid. And then once you're in college and things like that, forgetting.
You weren't in college.
When you were young, like 4, 5, 6 years old, God telling you you have a mission. And then envisioning what was going to happen. And then later it happens and you look back and you say, that wasn't like Oprah Winfrey's The Secret, where you just say something and it magically
happens. Oprah Winfrey's The Secret?
It's all about destiny and providence and bloodlines and backgrounds.
What?
And ongoing wars and God's plan and providence, and you step into that. It's not that God's making things happen. God's put forward these different future roads, and then you've got to choose the path you're going to go on, but the paths are predestined.
If he's saying that cause and effect exists, then I guess I agree with him. But the part that's really strange to me is that what he's expressing is that from a very young age, he's had visions of what he's doing now.
Right.
Which I don't believe at all.
No, it's because God gave him.
I don't believe that at all. His life would not be so full of complete 90-degree turns down bizarre roads.
He didn't tell you what the paths looked like, Dan.
I guess so.
God set out these paths, which, again, makes no sense.
It doesn't.
It makes no sense, because if God has already preordained certain paths, it doesn't matter which ones you go down.
Uh-huh.
You don't have any control over it.
Mm-hmm.
That's stupid.
In this next clip, Alex talks more about how the Trumps were crying during the speech. And again, I just have to stress, I have no evidence of this. I do not...
Also, I don't care.
Right. Oh, yeah, that's another point.
Yeah. While God
is marching, Melania Trump, with tears in her eyes, in ecstasy to see the country relaunched, and evil now facing
Alex, a she's not spirit from here.
Of liberty and justice and love of Christ. Her lips trembling, her eyes on fire with liberty and the Holy Spirit.
She was an illegal immigrant.
Trump's wife feeling it. Having to purse his lips and hold back tears, and you look at HD, the tear comes out of his eye.
That's right.
Knowing
she's
that they've tried
dead
to defy
inside
this nation, tried to crush it, tried to tear it apart, tried to conquer our souls, but they have failed.
So, I mean, this is just turning, like, Trump into a god king.
Yeah, that's
what's going on here.
Absolutely.
Like, this is almost like an attempt to deify this, which Alex has been on that tip for a long time.
Right.
But, like, it's so overt. It's so insanely naked, this attempt to inexorably tie American providence and what it means to be patriotic with this singular executive.
Right.
Which seems to be against what Alex pretends to stand for, but who knows?
Well, you know what Ramses II, his main rallying cry was 1776 2.0, I believe. Yeah.
Right.
As Ozymandias.
Ozymandias.
Ozymandias, yeah.
Americana.
Yeah, exactly.
If I know anything. So Alex, on this episode, one of his big narratives that is convoluted and I don't really care about is that he was looking at responses to Trump's speech.
Sure.
And he saw the mainstream media come out with a bunch of hit pieces about how Trump's stupid and all this is like Trump is making this about himself. But then those pieces were immediately taken down.
Ooh.
Because the media realized they were going to come out with this attack, but then no one liked it, so they doubled back. I don't know that this is true. I have no way I can confirm or deny this. I think what Alex is talking about is other people posted like streams or rebroadcasts of like CNN or MSNBC, and those got hit with copyright strikes.
Right.
That's what I'm guessing he's talking about, but I'm not really sure. He's not specific enough that there's any threads I can pull, and I don't care.
Right.
I think he's just making shit up.
It could just be completely made up.
Right. But part and parcel of this narrative is that the reason that they ended up taking all these things down was because the backlash from the patriots and the good Americans was so strong. Now, if you're wondering how Alex gauges that, he explains in this next clip.
Oh, boy.
And it's not very good.
It was so exciting, as I said last night, as I typed in Trump into YouTube. And every video for 10 pages deep was vicious attacks with headlines like, critics say it was terrible, Trump's horrible, Trump made it all about himself, public hates it, small crowds. And I clicked on dozens of them. And I looked at the comments, and every comment on the ones I clicked was just, I'm done, you're pathetic, this was a great event, he didn't make it about himself, it made it about all of us coming together, I'm so proud of my country, you know, I used to be a liberal, but now I learned they really do hate America, they want us all to hate each other, to control us, I mean, the comments were all on fire!
If you're gauging public sentiment by YouTube comments, you're not doing good.
No, that's the marketplace of ideas. That's the Acropolis of our times, Dan.
I would suggest that if you had better information, you wouldn't use YouTube comments as a reinforcement of your arguments.
I don't know.
I would say that generally speaking, not very serious people cherry pick YouTube comments in order to like reinforce it. I would say that this is a damning indictment of Alex's process and what he considers relevant information. If he thinks that YouTube comments are somehow worth being a part of a discussion, I think that, I don't know.
Well,
it's just,
and you gotta
figure. It's just embarrassing. Like if he wasn't playing a stacked game, like if he didn't have an audience that demanded so little of him, he would be, like, if we did that, we would be pilloried.
Oh, no, it would be a nightmare.
Like, that would be nuts.
If you cited as one of your sources a YouTube comment, everyone would go
even
apeshit.
Even 10 YouTube comments. Even if I used specifics.
Yeah.
It was like, hey, you know what? Everybody hates Trump, and here's why I believe that. Look at these YouTube comments.
Yeah.
Oh, holy man. Shit.
Also, it kind of suggests that when he says that he watched dozens and dozens of YouTube videos and looked at the comments, it's more like he went to dozens of videos and looked at the comments without watching the video.
I don't even know what he's saying.
You know?
It does not matter to me.
Who has time for dozens and dozens of YouTube videos?
Yeah. But, you know, these YouTube videos that he was watching that may or may not have been taken down, they were expressing a real hatred of America. Because they hate Trump.
Yep.
Now, it wasn't just YouTube videos that Alex found. There were also articles that were written that are America-hating.
Yes.
And Alex has found one, and this is how he decides to cover it.
Vox reporter says the U.S. would have been better off staying with England. And you look at the guy.
That's how you're going to judge?
What he said. Yeah, look at this guy. Look at this guy. Now,
don't read
Vox celebrates 4th of July by saying the American Revolution was a mistake. Let me explain something. Every reporter they've had on me from BuzzFeed or any of these places looks like this, whether it's a woman or a man. Put him back on screen, please. and blow up his face for people. He's got a face that's more evil than Brian Stelter's. Full screen, please.
That is an insult, sir.
Now, think about that. And you look at him, he's got this satisfied, evil, creepy, dirty, oily look. And then I Googled his name and more photos. Each one looks more creepy after the next.
Good analysis so far.
The disingenuousness of him.
Right, photos of a writer.
This is a guy on July 4th telling you how much America sucks, and you wouldn't let that guy clean your toilets. You wouldn't let him work on your pool. You wouldn't let him get anywhere near your children.
Okay, this is gross. So Alex is going really hard after Vox reporter Dylan Matthews, and Alex's primary complaint seems to be that Dylan isn't attractive. This is pretty weak stuff.
Yeah, from Alex. What did he write, Dan?
Well, I'll give you some context. The article that Alex is responding to is something that Dylan wrote in 2015. The article was updated this year, but I compared the articles, and it appears that the only update was giving it a new headline. Apparently, that gives Alex just enough justification to report on a four-year-old article that was written and published while Obama was president, as if it's somehow a recent thing and an attack on Trump.
And it was the last time the U.S. Women's National Team won the Women's World Cup, so we're all good together.
Dylan's argument comes down to three points as to why staying with the British Empire might have led to a better outcome, generally speaking.
Yeah.
The first is that slavery would have been abolished sooner. And this is not a debatable point. England had abolished slavery before the American Revolution, and abolished it in all of its colonies except India in 1834, with India following along in 1843. The Emancipation Proclamation didn't formally abolish slavery in the United States until 1865. I'm sure Alex would probably say that who cares about an extra 22 years of non-slavery, but I think that's a pretty dumb argument. So Dylan's first point is absolutely correct. If we were still in the British Empire, slavery would have been outlawed sooner and possibly even without a civil war being needed to do it.
Right.
The second argument that he makes is that while there would have been inevitable conflict and violence between the colonists and Native Americans, it would have been far less horrible if the colonies had remained as a part of the British Empire. Dylan's not painting a utopian version of what would possibly have been. Rather, he's just pointing out that the ethnic cleansing that took place in our early history was the direct result of an insatiable hunger for Western expansion, which the British set limits on with their proclamation of 1763. It's hard to know exactly how things would have played out, but if you look back at what our independent country did to Native peoples, it kind of does make you think a little bit.
Yeah.
It's possible. It's possible that that's a decent point.
No,
you're arguing a counterfactual, and that's always very difficult.
Right.
Like, imagine possible worlds, but there's something worth thinking about there.
Yeah, especially, but, you know, it's in terms of the dominoes that would have fallen, you cannot make any...
But that's why he has tons of caveats in there about, like, there still would have been fighting, people still would have been violent towards
each other. For sure, for sure.
But just possibly the Trail of Tears wouldn't have happened.
Yeah.
Possibly reservations wouldn't have happened. Who knows?
Yeah.
The last point Dylan makes is that the parliamentary system of government is more stable than what we have come up with. Parliamentary systems, he says, are less likely to collapse into dictatorships since they lack the focus on a singular authority, which characterizes presidential systems. He further points out that parliamentary systems generally experience less gridlock, and legislation can be generally passed much easier in that sort of system, as opposed to our conflict-based system that often ends up in a situation where one side wants something, one side wants the opposite of something, and no one can make any headway.
Complete gridlock, yeah.
Agree or disagree with Dylan Matthews' points, it's not fair to say that he hates America from the text of this article. It's one thing to dispute his premises. It's entirely another to accuse him of being a demon because you don't want to engage with his ideas, then do a little segment on your show where you call him ugly and imply he's a danger to children. This is childish bullshit, but it's no surprise coming from Alex.
Absolutely not.
Dylan's article was originally published on July 2nd, 2015. And on July 7th, 2015, Vox published a response article with the headline, quote, "No, the American Revolution was not a mistake." In this article, Jeff Stein does exactly what Alex Jones is incapable of doing, taking Dylan's points, considering them, and expressing counterpoints that he feels make a better argument. Surprisingly, not once in Stein's article does he call Dylan ugly.
No, he had to have at least
he
once.
He doesn't.
The headline was, here's a response to this ugly dude.
Also, look
bullshit.
At this uggo.
Yeah.
No, the American Revolution was a good idea. Get a load of this guy.
Yeah.
Fox published both of these articles because they both bring up interesting perspective on history. They both use primary sources to defend their differing views on how things would have been different if the United States hadn't declared independence. Vox published both of these articles not because they hate America, but because they're media outlets that are interested in publishing interesting content. In contrast to that, InfoWars is a media outlet interested in publishing content based on personal insults, making shit up, and lying about headlines.
Yeah.
The difference could not be clearer.
Right.
It's really interesting to me, especially within the context of these free speech dum-dums, this whole idea of like, dangerous ideas, you guys can't exist in the marketplace of ideas and debate our ideas. Like, Alex is talking about a 4-year-old Vox article that they themselves published a response to from another author where there was a debate between the two. Like, these articles are not just articles that exist where like a guy made this point and completely unrelated, another guy made a different point.
Yeah.
The Jeff Stein's article is in direct response to Dylan Matthews' article. Mm. There is an interplay that's happening between them within a media source.
Right.
Like, Vox is allowing these ideas to be discussed and interact with each other for public consumption.
Yeah.
That is a marketplace of ideas.
Right.
One guy saying American Revolution bad, the other saying, aha, no, good. It was good. And in fact, I disagree with some of your points. Now, here's why I disagree with those points. That is what Alex and his dickhole friends pretend they want to do. In reality, what Alex wants to do is say that these people are a bunch of globalist fucks and call them ugly and then imply that they want to hurt your kids and then make money off of doing that. That's what it is. It's a con.
Any free speech advocate on the right, all they really want is to be wrong loudly and never have to deal with it. They don't want any argument. They don't want any kind of learning possibility. They don't want any pushback. They want to be able to say what they want to say, no matter how wrong, no matter how racist, no matter how stupid, without ever having to deal with the consequences of it.
Free speech.
Exactly.
Jordan, I've been texting you since yesterday and telling you that I have found
groundbreaking
something completely amazing.
Game-changing.
Game-changing.
You said game-changing,
specifically. This to me is game-changing.
The game will be changed.
And this is also dovetailing into where we reach the point of the episode where things take a little bit of a feel of a Wacky Wednesday episode.
All right. Okay.
And that is because Alex gets a guest to come into studio. And this is a guest that we're aware of. We've met this guy before, but I don't know if we've paid him nearly enough attention.
Okay.
This is a guy who's Italian. He pretends that he knows shit about the Vatican.
Oh, no.
Ladies and gentlemen, I present to you Alex Jones hanging out with Leo Zagami.
Jesus Christ.
Leo came here Wednesday and he said, I brought you a bottle of champagne that was very expensive in all the news in Italy when Trump won 3 years ago. And so he brought me a bottle of it. In fact, the decorative box is right over there on that desk. If somebody could bring it to me out of the dark over there. And I was kind of like, well, what are we going to celebrate? Well, just the fact that Trump's in there. But now that after this 4th of July speech, that's his biggest yet, the way the left demonized it, lied about it, said it was all about him when it wasn't, how well it was received while they're trying to ban the American flag and, you know, trying to do all of this. This is a very good time to celebrate. So I don't normally have champagne, at 12:30 noon. I've actually don't even really drink much these days. But in celebration of this, I am more than happy to do this with Leo Zagami and his lovely wife who's here. So in a minute, she'll have to come up and share out of your glass. I've only got two glasses here, Leo Zagami, but.
He keeps being like, I should have had a third glass.
Yeah.
There's a real sense of regret that I rarely see in him, like, could have had a third glass.
Rude. It's just rude.
Yeah. Also, funny story, Leo Zagami's wife in 2017 published a book called Confessions of an Illuminati Princess.
Okay.
That I do believe was maybe ghostwritten by Leo.
Okay. Well, yeah.
Or at least the blurb on Amazon is, because it seems to glorify Leo.
Of course. My wife wrote a book, and it's all about how giant my penis is. Isn't that crazy?
It's close to that, but replace giant penis with super important Illuminati insider.
Yeah, exactly.
Jordan, I've listened to Leo Zagami show up on Alex's show in the past. I've heard him even when he made an appearance on Project Camelot, because he did.
Yes, he did.
I have listened to him a bunch, and a lot of the stuff that I was able to find in my research today is not stuff that has ever come up. It is not stuff that Alex has ever saw fit to be like, hey, now I should tell you this about Leo Zagami. I cannot wait to tell you. This is one of my favorite stories that I will ever tell on this podcast. And no matter how much I do this, I cannot oversell this.
Okay. All right. All right. You got a lot to live up to.
So here's Leo just talking some shit.
What would you call this historical time we're in right now?
It's a time of real renaissance. It's a time of getting back what was taken from us. And we were in Italy the first organization to believe in Trump before he became a president.
With Italian- like 4 years ago when he was first running, I met with you in Italy again. You said he's going to win. He's like Berlusconi, who I know you're friends with, and you were explaining it all to me.
Oh, no.
He's not friends with Berlusconi.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, because if he's friends with Berlusconi, that would be a great starting point for the best story that you could ever tell on this podcast.
I strongly believe that that is part of his mythology that he has just invented. I see no evidence that he's friends with Berlusconi.
You're a big fan of Mussolini, right? You were a huge fan of that. Yes.
So in this next clip, Leo confesses to a crime.
A bottle like this costs 2,000 euros. That means approximately $2,500.
Wow.
So we are about to open a very expensive bottle, which I advise you to keep for posterity because...
Oh, I will. I've never had a 2,000 bottle of anything. So. I think $100 is fancy for me at a wedding or something.
I'm
all
working
right. Well,
class, baby.
Yeah.
And I have to thank also the people at the Fiumicino airport, my friend Andrea Signini, who came to pick us up outside of the airport and brought us through the VIP line so we could avoid any control.
That's right, because you're not allowed to bring liquor or alcohol into a country. But
well,
you're able
especially
to.
A luxury thing like that, a brand like this one, because if you go and check on the internet the name of this brand, which is Maurice Tricot.
So quite a journey to get this here to
yes,
us.
Yes, yes.
Wow.
But it was worth it.
One bottle of this, that's all that exists.
That's it.
He illegally trafficked champagne into the country.
So if I understand correctly, they are celebrating somebody getting past customs and border protection.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Fun irony. Good, when good. It's a really expensive bottle of champagne, you get to enjoy.
Yeah.
Dumbass.
Fun.
I don't really care about that. I may be...
Hypocrisy means nothing anymore.
No. But also, I might be of the mind that I don't give a shit if you bring a bottle of champagne into the country.
Yeah, me neither.
I don't know why that needs to be heavily controlled.
I'm sure there's a reason, but who cares?
What I'm saying is I'm not calling for Leo Zagami to get in trouble for bringing a bottle
Absolutely
of champagne
not.
Into the country.
No.
It's just hilarious.
I just want him to be detained in some sort of camp.
So you remember earlier when you were talking about how Melania is an immigrant.
She is an illegal immigrant for at least a year.
Well, Alex makes an interesting, little comment here.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the President Trump. Oh, and Melania.
And Melania.
Gee, boy, I want her to run for president.
Yeah. This Christian.
She can't.
Let's repeal the amendment that foreign-born can't be president for her, but have it the amendment only for her.
See, it's funny because of all the stuff he said about Obama.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's funny because she's married to a guy who was a birther.
Right.
It's funny because Alex doesn't really care about all the principles.
Not even in the slightest.
But it's funny.
Because even then, all he really wants is... Trump to be telling her what to do while she's president.
Right. So
fucking stupid.
Alex keeps talking about how hot Leo's wife is.
Great.
It's weird and kind of uncomfortable, and it leads to this.
I'm very glad to be here with my wife.
Absolutely beautiful lady.
Shares with Melania the fact that they are both ex-models. And so it's a coincidence, but also we like fine ladies.
Well, I tell you,
and you have also a fine wife, which I met when you were not even, I think, married yet.
No, yeah.
Ah, we like fine women. So they just sort of talk a bit of shit for the first, your first glass of champagne sitting around bowl, like just talking about nothing.
Yeah.
So now, Jordan, we've talked about Leo Zagami a little bit in the past. He popped up in our 2015 investigation as a complete weirdo, saying absurd things that Alex accepted as smart-sounding because he thinks anyone with an accent is a genius.
Yes.
To recap for anyone who missed those episodes, Leo Zagami's whole thing is that he used to be in the Illuminati, but now he's become a whistleblower warning the world about their nefarious satanic plans. He also apparently is a Vatican insider, which I guess just comes with the territory. You know, like, if you're in with the Illuminati, you probably get invited to some Vatican mixers.
For sure.
You know, a little cocktail hour at the Vatican.
Yeah, I assume you go to every place of power, you know, like, you know.
Masons.
For sure.
They're in the mix.
Yeah. Getty Museum, for totally. Sure you're invited there all the time.
He's running one of the simplest scams imaginable. The Illuminati doesn't exist, so he can just make up whatever shit he wants and trick idiots into thinking he has inside information about it. On the flip side, the Catholic Church is an insanely corrupt organization full of monsters, and people who protect monsters. So they're pretty easy also to make shit up about and make it sound credible.
Mm-hmm.
If you just predict that a bunch of priests are going to be outed as abusers, there's a non-zero chance that even if you're making it up, your prediction may come true.
I would say there's probably 100% chance that...
It's a safe game he's playing.
Yeah.
There's very little reliable information about Leo Zagami online. For the most part, no one really cares about him outside of conspiracy circles, so the only real coverage of him comes from that perspective, which isn't super critical, and all of it's pretty dicey.
Yeah.
However, there is an amazing story to be told here, and in order to tell you it, I've had to scour message boards, long-dormant conspiracy sites, and foreign YouTube channels. What I'm going to present to you today is as close as I can get to the actual true story of how Leo Zagami got to where he is today and how he clearly demonstrates how little research Alex and his team do on somebody before they allow them to be presented as a credible guest on their show. So, there isn't too much concrete information known about Leo Zagami pre-2008.
Really important to have that if you're going to make bullshit up about the Illuminati.
Yeah. According to the bio he has on his website, he was working as a DJ and record producer under the name Leo Young until 2006, at which point he decided to start exposing the Illuminati. His father was a professor of psychology named Elio Zagami, and his mother was Jessica Lyon Young, who Leo alleges is, quote, a member of the Queen Mother of England's family.
Her middle name is literally Lyon.
But that's his,
his interpretation of it, or his
L-Y-O-N. Yeah.
No. I know, but, I mean, come on.
Yeah. That's apparently his, mother's, his maternal last name.
Right.
I don't know. He doesn't specify how he's related to the Queen Mother, and from digging around in as much as I can't find any close relations of the Queen Mother who have that name. The only references I can find to Jessica Lyon Young being related to the royal family come from various websites that have reposted Leo's self-written bio. Given the other things I know about him, I strongly suspect he's making up his connection to the Queen Mother. Leo's life story up to going public against the Illuminati goes something like this. He was born into a Scottish-Sicilian Illuminati aristocratic bloodline, and as such, he's been a part of the Illuminati since the day he was born.
Of course.
As a lifelong member, he was groomed as a prince of the Illuminati, reaching the rank of the 33rd degree of Masonic initiation at the notorious Italian P2 Lodge.
Okay.
Before he decided to expose the secret society, he was set to replace the previous king of the Illuminati, but Leo was disgusted by the Satanism he was surrounded by, so he turned his back on it all and chose the path of light.
So we're going, this is full Lion King here.
You bet.
Okay.
This is an essential piece of his hero's journey. He stood to inherit everything, all the power in the world, all the riches, but because he cared too much about the world, he rejected it all.
Mm-hmm.
To fact check his story, I should point out that the lodge he claimed to be a part of, P2, was definitely real, but it also closed when Leo was 6 years old, so it seems unlikely he was a member there. The only direct evidence he's ever provided of his membership in any Masonic lodge is a picture of his membership badge from Kirby Lodge 2818. The thing that's important to understand about the Masons, though, is that they keep exhaustive records. Their entire organization basically revolves around ritual, and record keeping is a part of that. Included in their record keeping, of course, are reports where they kick people out of their lodge.
Oh, no.
Leo Zagami was kicked out of Kirby Lodge within 2 years of joining for behavioral problems, including, but not limited to, excessive use of profanity. After that point, he started just joining a bunch of fake lodges that aren't even involved with the Masons, but they seek to create the illusion that they are. If he ever reached any high level of initiation anywhere, it's in fake Masonic lodges, which seems on brand.
Yeah. Are they more like apostate Masonic lodges, or are they like a bunch of weekend dudes just like,
I think it varies.
Yeah.
And I think some of it is either of those groups, and I think there's even a third cross section that is like, I want to be weirder than that.
Yeah, of course.
Whatever I feel like is Masonic isn't actually, so I'm going to create my own lodge that adheres to my version of them like praising aliens.
Yeah, it's just branding.
Yeah. So in 2008, Leo found himself living in Norway. In March 2008, Kerry Cassidy over at Project Camelot received a message from a Norwegian politician who had a dire warning. Quote, the Norwegian government is building more and more underground bases and bunkers. Planet X is coming.
Okay.
The people that are going to be left on the surface will die, along with the others, and get no help whatsoever. The plan is that 2 million Norwegians are going to be safe, and the rest will die. All the governments in the world are aware of this, and they just say it is going to happen. I assure you 100% that things will happen. There are 4 years to prepare for the end game. Get weapons and make survival groups, and a place where you can be safe with food for a time.
Okay, so he was on the 2012 tip.
Well, this is from an alleged Norwegian politician.
Right, right, right.
It's just important to point out that at the time, Leo Zagami lived in Norway.
That is, it does seem like those two facts might come.
The politician offered to answer any questions Kerry might have, which led to a correspondence. In his messages, he makes a number of predictions that do not come true, and they should have, based on him saying that the things were set up in advance.
Yeah.
They weren't predictions in the way he was saying it.
Right.
He was saying, this is what the plan is. For instance, he said that Siv Jensen would be elected Prime Minister of Norway in 2009, which didn't happen.
Oh, okay.
Interestingly, in February 2008, Leo Zagami had been interviewed on Project Camelot. So he was in place to be a valuable source to check in with about this letter from an alleged Norwegian politician. And that's exactly what happened.
He ran a two-man, one-man game on Kerry Cassidy?
Maybe. We'll get a bit more into this
okay.
as it goes along. There's something very suspicious going on
here. I am enjoying his temerity, Dan.
Yeah. So Kerry called Leo to interview him about this alleged politician whistleblower. Leo's profile in the conspiracy world was raised dramatically in the span of a couple months thanks to the platform of him being on Project Camelot. If you'll recall, when we covered Jessica Schaub, she specifically said that after she went on Project Camelot, she, quote, became famous overnight.
Yeah.
While it may seem like an irrelevant joke now, Project Camelot was a pretty large platform in the conspiracy community a decade ago. And Leo undoubtedly got a whole lot of traction out of being featured on the show and being mixed up in the story of this alleged Norwegian politician warning about Planet X. A cynical mind might suggest, as you kind of already have, given how wrong the alleged politician was about pretty much everything, it's likely that the letter was a bit of a stunt. And maybe the only person who stood to gain anything from that kind of stunt was Leo himself. I have no idea, though. I can't prove it either way. It could be an amazing coincidence that right after he got interviewed in Oslo for Project Camelot, Kerry received a mysterious whistleblowing message from a Norwegian politician.
Well, you know,
it was a
Norwegian politician because it was sent from lzagami@gmail.com. Who else could send that Norwegian politician letter?
Who knows? Soon after his appearance on Project Camelot, Leo's wife left him and took their son with her. It's very hard to determine what actually happened here, but I can tell you that I don't believe the version of the story that's repeated ad nauseum in conspiracy circles. As they tell it, well, hold on, I'll just read to you from this blog called The Controversy Papers, which is written by someone who claims to be a personal friend of Leo's. Keep that in mind for later.
No.
Controversy papers. Hold on to that thought.
This dude is Kevin Durant of conspiracy theories.
Quote, Leo's wife, who had been working all along for the Illuminati, has accused him of spousal abuse.
Accused.
I don't know if the accusation of domestic violence is even, I don't know if it's true or even if the accusations were ever actually made. But I do know that I don't believe that his wife left because he was secretly, she was secretly working for the Illuminati.
Doubtful.
David Icke pulled this exact same stunt in 2012 when he divorced his second wife, Pamela Lee Richards, who said he decided they needed to split up after 11 years of marriage because he, quote, became suspicious that she was a shape-shifting alien. When intimacy deteriorates for these people, their loved ones strangely always end up being secretly involved in with their imagined enemies. You can even see this with Alex Jones as he blurs the lines between the actions of the globalists and his ex-wife.
Right.
The globalists want to take my kids away.
Right, that sort
of thing.
It used to be we just called them witches and burned them, you know? It was a simpler time for these assholes.
Now, what's interesting is that Leo's first wife was Muslim. In fact, he repeatedly insists that she is a direct descendant of Muhammad. And you know what else? At that time, Leo was Muslim as well. In a message board post.
What?
Yeah.
What?
In a message board post, Leo wrote that his wife, quote, started to say to me that I should stop immediately my Illuminati confessions on the net and convert to a strict and more fundamentalist view of Islam, otherwise she will leave me. That was obviously a brainwashing imposition for me, and I couldn't accept such a proposal.
Okay. Okay. All right. I'm riveted, first off.
This goes so many different places.
I have no idea what's going to happen next.
So Leo would go on to later claim that he had converted to Islam to infiltrate the religion, and he became a Muslim, quote, during an Illuminati ritual he made in Egypt under the Great Pyramid of Giza.
That's how you become a Muslim?
Apparently, yeah.
By an Illuminati religion?
Yeah, apparently so.
Okay, okay.
So he even had a Muslim alias, Khalid Saifullah Khan. If there's one thing that you learn about Leo Zagami when you look into him, you learn this very quickly. It's that he is a dude who has used a lot of different names in his career, which most normal people don't do. Generally.
That's because most normal people don't like to have a good time, Dan. Mm-hmm. That's why they don't do it.
So after his wife left, he miraculously realized that the version of Islam that she followed was actually a form of New World Order brainwashing and represented a system that was afraid of Leo's life's work.
Right, but wasn't he inducted into that same religion through the Illuminati?
Don't worry about trying to make this make
sense.
Okay,
you're right. I apologize. That
there
was
are
on
going
me.
To be a
that
lot.
That was on me.
There are going to be a lot of similar problems with this.
Okay.
So because his wife was involved with this New World Order brainwashing that was afraid of him, Leo was punished by having his marriage broken up and having his child taken from him.
Awful.
Now, from what I know about Leo, and from what we can learn about him, and what we will learn about him today, I don't believe this angle. I think he's a maniacal shithead who, if not directly abusive, is someone who you might not want to divorce from if you find yourself accidentally married to him.
Yeah.
From his account of what happened, quote, in any case, after 2 weeks of not seeing my son Isaac, I tried to put pressure on the religious movement of my wife in order to show me my son again, but instead, at 9:30 p.m. on the 4th of March, two policemen and a policewoman came to my house and arrested me, so I spent 12 hours in a cold prison cell. So to translate, Leo was harassing his wife, and she called the police, and they responded appropriately.
Yes, yeah.
While Leo was in prison for that difficult 12 hours, he had a breakthrough when he met with a priest. He found the strength to tell the priest about his, quote, forced conversion into Islam to please my wife's family and the way they sold me out to the authorities as the only a true Judas could do. Yes, my wife sold me to my worst enemy, the Norwegian Freemasons. So the conversion to Islam was both forced by his wife and an intentional plan to infiltrate the religion. I got it. Okay, whatever.
His greatest enemy is the Norwegian Mason?
The Freemasons of Norway.
That is a fucking serious, specific and esoteric grudge to hold forever. That's fun.
Yep. Conveniently, when he was arrested for that 12 hours, the Jesuit Freemason Norwegian police confiscated his computers, which is where he kept all the proof about all the stories he tells about bigwigs and Illuminati.
It is so amazing how all of his proof is just gone.
Yeah.
And there, you know what? There are so many people who were in the CIA,
uh-huh,
and everybody that you would ask about it is dead. It's unfortunate how this happens so frequently, Dan.
Yeah, and this is another essential piece of this hero's journey that he has. This tragedy that makes him unable to unequivocally prove his point to the masses. If his wife hadn't been brainwashed into filing false charges against him, he never would have had his computer seized, and he would still have all the proof he needs to take down the global satanic conspiracy.
Ugh.
But now he just has to be totally right about everything, and everyone just looks at him like he's a madman.
Right.
Spoiler alert. He is a madman.
Yeah, that does. So far, we're not getting a lot of, I would say there are a lot of red flags for madman coming up, you know?
Man. You have no idea where this is going. Leo's message board post continues, quote, from the 5th of March 2008, I'm officially a Christian again, as my sufferance has made me realize that. He is our only savior, and Muhammad is a false prophet whose descendants are involved in Satanism and the New World Order. So, Leo left Islam and rejoined Christianity in 2008. But guess what, Jordan? That isn't the only thing he rejoined. According to his telling of it, he also rejoined the Illuminati.
I really feel like they don't allow that. I'm just gonna say, I imagine, and mm-hmm, that's just me, that somebody higher up in the Illuminati is like, no take backsies.
You can't trust this guy.
Yeah, exactly. he stole all of our private information, and now we're just gonna be like, cool, come on back.
I will say that It does work this way when you're making it up.
Yes, that's true. That's true. That is helpful.
So Leo claimed in May 2008 that he, quote, personally controls major parts of the Illuminati, but he was now using his influence in the organization for good. As you've already pointed out, this makes no sense. He claimed that he was protected by a 12,000-man-strong paramilitary group called the Green Lion Security Team. Interestingly, Lion being his maternal last name.
Of course.
There is no evidence that this group exists. Apparently, rejoining the Illuminati didn't protect Leo from legal trouble.
Oh, but it seems like it would have to.
Seems like it should.
The Illuminati run everything. He's got 12,000 dudes protecting him,
mm-hmm.
and nobody can get assault charges dropped?
According to his own book, Confessions of an Illuminati, Volume 2, he was arrested in July 2008 when he arrived at a courthouse for a child custody hearing. Apparently, he had recently appeared on an internet conspiracy show and, quote, in a typical Italian act of bravado, he not only threatened to kill the Norwegian Prime Minister, Jens Stoltenberg, but also had threatened to bring down the buildings of government and parliament in Norway.
Right.
That is in his own book.
Yeah, that's probably a crime.
His defense that he offers towards this clear terrorist threat that he made wasn't to say that he never said those things, but he says, quote, he had not been serious about the death threats. It is the Italian way of expressing strong emotion through strong words.
All right.
Yes, I threatened to kill him. I was Italian at the time.
I was being Italian, hey!
Bad excuse for terrorist threats towards a prime minister.
Okay.
Leo was lucky to walk away without facing any charges or jail time from that. But I would say that the experience probably didn't do much to help his already enormous persecution complex and tendencies towards grandiosity. He continued unabated, pretending that he was in charge of a large portion of the Illuminati. Not one to let this craziness cool down to room temperature, Leo Zagami made another interesting religious conversion in 2009.
Shinto?
No.
Oh.
As he declared, quote, I announce the new religion for 2012, Matrixism. Yes, Matrixism is the official religion of my Ordo Illuminatorum Universalis. Nothing else will be tolerated amongst true illuminated beings of light working for the science of God and the kingdom of God in 2019.
I've only got one thing to say to that, Dan.
Whoa. There's a pretty consistent thread through his work that the kingdom of God is going to be started in 2019, which makes it particularly upsetting to have him now in 2019 popping champagne with Alex Jones as they celebrate Trump's 4th of July speech. Matrixism was a religion created by anonymous individuals online in 2004, right after the release of the third Matrix movie. Leo would later go on to imply that he was involved in the creation of the religion, which might be true. Since the founders were anonymous, I can't really confirm or deny it. What I can confirm is that creating a religion based on a movie does seem to be squarely in the category of things I would believe Leo Zagami could have done
in
his life.
For sure.
And it makes me very sad.
It's so sad. You know what? Why
it's
don't
like
we...
the people who got really depressed after Avatar
yeah.
because they could never live in Pandora. That's what I think of. It's like,
yeah.
you know, you can just feel things. And...
Yeah. When are we going to get judges to understand who's dangerous and who isn't? To the point where we can get them to... James O'Keefe, massively dangerous. Somebody who does... somebody who fucking steals something from a goddamn 7-Eleven, not dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
Leo Zagami, ruining thousands upon thousands of lives.
I don't know if he's ruining thousands, but he has a really insidious influence.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Get him in there, man.
It's very weird how he's eluded, first of all... just outright exposure and also prison time in his life. So you could say that at this point in 2009, when he has announced that Matrixism is the official religion of his world, Leo was fully back on his bullshit. He had a fake faction of the Illuminati he was now in charge of,
right.
and segments of the conspiracy world that had previously promoted him and raised his profile were kind of forced to go along with his new developments or risk having to admit that they'd been fooled by a narcissistic weirdo just because he had an Italian accent.
God, that's such a good scam.
He has them trapped.
Yeah.
They can't say, like, oh, this guy's full of shit, because they promoted him as an Illuminati insider and have based tons of their beliefs on him.
Right.
So Leo continued to peddle his Illuminati nonsense, giving speeches here and there. But honestly, his trail runs a little bit cold for a while. Between 2009 and 2011, I'm not really sure what he was up to. But then, in December 2011, he was arrested. I have literally no idea what he was arrested for, but I have to assume it has something to do with being a dick in public.
Yes.
When he was in a processing room, he gave a cameraman a little interview that illustrates the mindset that he was in at the time. And we are now going to listen.
Oh, we got it? Interview. Oh, shit, yes.
In this first clip, Leo talks about how he was arrested. And then talks about what's going to happen on December 21st, 2012, because Leo Zagami was very into 2012.
I will talk English, so my English listeners understand better. I was arrested last night here in Italy for saying that the Italian government is a government of criminals, that the bourgeois have stolen everything.
He's not
and
wrong.
Us aristocrats are now living a miserable life.
True.
But also the poor people are living a miserable life because the order of things has been changed. But we know that on the 21st of December 2012, there will be a new world order and a new sacred Roman Empire, which is the old sacred Roman Empire, rising again with an emperor, which is the Prince of Sant'Elia here for you, Baron of the Sacro Roman Impero, and Marchese di Poggio Gregorio. And basically, I will be elevated to the rank of emperor.
So,
whoa, hold on. New Holy Roman Empire, which is actually the same Holy Roman Empire.
Right.
And it just so happens that Leo Zagami will be elevated to Emperor of the World.
On December 21st, 2012, Leo Zagami will become the Emperor of the New Holy Roman Empire, which is the New World Order, which will take over.
Right.
Yes.
Now, instead of doing that, we know that in 2019, he is opening a bottle of champagne with Alex Jones.
We do know that.
That is a bit of a fall.
It's a difference, certainly. There's a little bit of, I think that some people could say, hey, this could be a guy doing a silly Italian accent. This isn't Leo Zagami.
Yeah.
I watched the video. It is 100% Leo Zagami.
Totally him.
And he doesn't seem out of his mind. He doesn't seem like on drugs or anything like that. It just seems like he's frustrated smoking a cigarette in like a holding room.
Well, I will give him this possibility.
Mm-hmm.
Should he so want to take this out? It's entirely possible that he is having a full-on manic episode.
Totally.
And is completely delusional about that.
Well, but the problem is that the delusions fit in with his life's work.
Exactly.
It just seems like a more overt explication of the things that he believes.
Right.
And one of those things is he thinks that he is literally Jesus.
So, I am who I am. I am that I am. I change my my body like I change my clothes. I've been here forever. I am the Sphinx which hides at the shadow of the pyramids. I am that Leo you see at the roots of the obelisk in St. Peter's. It says, Leo vicit de tribu Judah radix David. And so this holy grail has been preserved in my family for centuries. They were into the Leone family of Rome, then went to Scotland, but that's why the lion is the alchemical symbol that hides the bloodline of Jesus.
Mm.
So the Merovingian is all rubbish. The truth bloodline of Jesus instead is being preserved in the lion family of Scotland, which is all connected to the English royal family. The British Empire has this great opportunity of having the royal blood of David, King David. I have been now recognized by the Jews as the Messiah, as Yosha, as obviously for them it was a shock because a lot of them considered me a goyim, an impure, because I'm so mixed. Sure. But I am that Messiah. What can I do?
What can I do?
Look, when you're the Messiah, what do you got to do?
Very interesting that Alex doesn't bring up this sort of thing. Like, remember a couple years back and you said you were Jesus? Do you want to maybe make a clarification for our audience about I didn't mean that or something?
I did mean that.
Right. Now, that would be difficult, I think, for Alex to be like, our next guest, Leo Zagami, has said he's Jesus in the past.
Yeah, yeah.
And that the Jews have admitted as such, which was surprising.
Yeah, it would be surprising for the Jews to admit that he is the Messiah.
It would be tough.
I would be surprised. If Bibi Netanyahu was like, guys, we gotta do it.
Look, I'm as shocked as you. Check this guy out, though.
Yeah, no. He's Italian.
It's crazy, but he's the fucking Messiah. I don't want it to be true any more than you do, but what are we going to do?
Hey, what are you going to do? He's Jesus.
This next clip, put your mic down because if you thought that the revelation that he is Jesus is shocking, this next clip is so much more shocking.
We are also working with the Muslim brothers. I am Jesus, but we have also the Mahdi. And who is the Mahdi? The Mahdi is Osama bin Laden. Alhamdulillah. So Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim and Shaitan ar-Rahim, because we are against Satan, both me and Osama bin Laden, and I was the one who signed the order which was given to Comandante George Ugo Balestrieri to bring down the Twin Towers. So it's my sole responsibility, but when you will understand the full picture in 2012, you will thank me for it. Trust me, my friends.
So, Leo Zagami did 9/11.
That is one claim I would never have guessed. I would never have guessed that I am Jesus would be followed up with, I'm working with Osama bin Laden, yeah, and I ordered 9/11.
No. I have the sole responsibility.
Sole responsibility for 9/11.
So that's tough.
Now that's fun.
That's tough for Alex, I assume. That gets George Bush off the hook.
Leo, before we continue real quick, I just want to say thanks for 9/11. That was great.
Yeah, that's strange. And again, the thing that I want to point out is that I've listened to a ton of Leo Zagami interviews, and the way he's speaking is not out of order.
Right.
Or it's not out of the norm.
It's,
you know,
consistent.
One of the things that I know, I've noticed with you, when you have like more manic times, your manner of speaking is a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's more pressure behind the speech. There's more, you speak quicker.
Absolutely.
And I think that's pretty indicative of people whenever they're in those episodes or in those states. This is very normal.
This is relaxed almost.
This is normal speech patterns, for Leo Zagami.
Yeah.
In all the interviews that I've seen of his. So like, I don't know. I don't think that this is necessarily indicative of some sort of a break with reality as much as it is like, I got arrested. I shouldn't be arrested. I'm Jesus.
Yeah.
It's exasperation more than, like a break.
Right. That's it. That this sounds almost like if Robert Evans from The Kid Stays in the Picture was just a little bit less, he was just a little bit more drunk when he was given those interviews, you'd be like, yeah, that does sound like you. Robert Evans, you probably think you were Jesus while you're producing Rosemary's Baby.
So he did 9/11. He's Jesus. He's working with Osama bin Laden.
And the Jews accepted that he was Jesus.
And they're not the only ones. We're going to learn later that some other group has accepted
him as
the Messiah. But we'll get to that.
Scientologists?
We'll get to that in a moment. In this next clip, he makes it clear that once he ascends, democracy is going to be gone. And Christianity will be outlawed.
The Sacred Roman Empire. You can call it new sacred Roman, but it's not new. It's the old. It's just coming back. Because it never died. Because you lived an illusion with the democracies. Because for 3 centuries we decided to initiate you in certain rights and certain things. But in the order, you can have the bourgeois taking over. But in the right, it's always the aristocracy that protects the knighthoods, the real knighthoods. Like the Knights Templars, the Teutonic Knights, the Maltese Knights, and the great tradition of the Christian Church.
The Knights of Columbus.
We are here to bring you back to reality. I'm Neo, I'm Leo, I'm the prophet of Matrixism.
Ooh.
In 10 years from now, Matrixism will be the only religion of the empire.
So within 10 years of 2011, Matrixism will be the only religion that's allowed, which implies very strongly that Christianity will be outlawed.
Yeah,
it won't be allowed.
It won't be allowed.
Which I think Alex should be very against. This is a guy who's legitimately saying he wants to get rid of Christianity in favor of a novelty religion he has allegedly created about a movie.
And not just
that,
but he did it in the best possible way.
What?
Really? I'm Neo, I'm Leo, and... Christianity is going to be abolished.
I'm Neo. I'm Leo.
And I'm not going
to
put up with
it.
Yeah, exactly.
So, in Leo's conception, in there he's saying that, like, we allowed you to be, have democracy, but we're here to bring you back to reality.
Right. Get back in.
Which is that we are the aristocrats, we are in charge.
Gotta be.
Which, again, is something Alex should be staunchly against.
You would think.
So, his conception, Leo's, is that, in 2012, he will ascend to the role of emperor of the new Holy Roman Empire.
Of course.
As Jesus. And somehow, I guess, 9/11 was part of that, setting the stage for it.
Yeah. You'll see in 2012.
We're past it now, and I don't
no,
see
No, I think you'll see in 2012. I think you'll see you in 2012,
I
Dan.
Don't think the world has thanked him for it.
I think you'll see that everybody is like, thanks, Leo.
Leo, we didn't see your logic, your strategy. Man, when we're wrong, we can admit it. What a dick.
Oh, man.
So, but his conception is that that's going to happen in 2012. And then for 7 years, between 2012 and 2019, there will be a period of tribulation.
Sure.
And it'll resolve in 2019, but he's not really clear about what the resolution implies. But there's one thing that is true, and he does say, and that is that if you don't follow him, you will die.
Oh, okay.
But in the meantime, we will suffer terrible consequences from 2012 to 2019. The 7 years of tribulation will hit the world so high, hard and hard and hard. And only the ones who will be faithful to me will be able to enter the kingdom of God, just like I told you 2,000 years ago. So I'm not here to be crucified again, or to come here and say, hi, I'm Jesus. And then, you know what happens? Then they will just literally not believe me. So I had to bring this proofs to the Vatican, and the Vatican has finally accepted that I am that Messiah, because I showed them the codes that were hidden inside the Vatican that only the real Jesus could have. So I leave to you to decide if I'm the Messiah or not.
I've decided you're not.
Only the real Jesus would have the codes in the Vatican.
Uh-huh.
Right. So Jesus was part of the Catholic Church?
Yes.
Like at the, okay. Cool.
And there is a padlock down there that has a really complicated code that only the real Jesus could unlock.
Only the real Jesus.
So now we've got the Jews and the Vatican have both decided that Leo Lion Zagami, Leo Neo.
And Osama bin Laden.
Well, they're fine that the Savior is working with Osama bin Laden, I guess.
Right.
This is a tough pill to swallow.
I like it though.
Yeah.
This is what we call a big swing.
Yes. So in this next clip, Leo insists that, if you betray him, you will not get into heaven.
Well, of course.
We came back in this life just to serve you, humanity, no one else. I never made any money out of what I did. I live in poverty myself. I follow the good example of Christ, because Christ is me. Because it's in my blood. Because my blood is a bloodline of the holy grail. Don't ever forget that. Don't betray me. Otherwise, you will never enter the kingdom of God.
That's a threatening.
I like it. I remember a lot of the times in the Bible when Jesus was like, don't you forget it.
Yeah, don't flex on me or you're going to hell.
Yeah, exactly.
So in this next clip, Leo offers a little bit of insight into the nature of God. It turns out that God is an alien, and Leo is sent here to purify humanity.
Man!
God is man, yes. God is man, but he's also real God. And it's an alien from Sirius, the prince of Sirius. With my DNA, with my grail, with my genetical code, I will purify once again your race and lead to 1,000 years of peace in a great kingdom of God. Thank you very much for the people of the world.
All right. There's one last clip here where he just sums it up, that he is working with the New World Order and that he is God.
Sure.
Remember, 1776.
What?
2012. The New World Order is the Kingdom of God. And that God has a name. Leo Lion Zagami.
So he's God.
Lion Zagami is God.
All of that happened before Alex ever started having Leo on as a supposed guest in the Illuminati and as an insider in Vatican affairs. All of this, all of the things that I've told you about his past, including an interview that is publicly available, where he declares himself the Messiah and solely responsible for 9/11. You'd think that Alex would want to ask him about how he'd taken this responsibility for 9/11, how he declared himself the Messiah, as recognized by both the Jews and the New World Order, and the Vatican. Or you'd want to ask him about how he'd propose to outlaw Christianity in favor of his new cult of Matrixism, once the New World Order, which he himself was the head of, took power in December 2012. Weirdly, none of that ever comes up on InfoWars.
It is strange.
Despite Leo making a bunch of appearances on Alex's show, as well as being a noted guest on David Knight and Owen Schroyer's shows as well.
Do they ever even talk about Kung Fu?
No.
Oh.
I think the record clearly shows that Leo Zagami is less an expert in anything than he is an unhinged lunatic. But he's the sort of lunatic that's very useful for someone like Alex. A person like Leo is useful as a force of escalation. Any decent mainstream news outlet can tell you about the corruption at the Vatican and how there's a systemic problem within the Catholic Church where abuses have been covered up and abusers protected. And that should make you feel mad and cause you to want to see actions taken. But Leo Zagami, by pretending to be an insider, can tell Alex that the priests are actually abusing children because it serves the purposes of demons, which they've conjured to the earth using black magic. And you can see how these two situations imply slightly different solutions. That's the sort of role that Leo Zagami can play
right.
towards radicalization, escalation of rhetoric.
Right.
He's very dangerous.
Yeah, it's... So he's essentially acting as a protector of the Vatican in certain sense. Because if you can convince enough people that the real issue is demons. They're not going to go to the fucking cops and say, look at this shit.
Yeah.
Vote for Trump to perform an exorcism on the 4th of July.
Yeah, I mean, perhaps unintentionally. I mean, it's hard to nail down exactly, you know, what is conscious and what is
right.
just kind of a byproduct of stupidity. But yeah, I mean, the direct effect of it is probably making it more difficult to treat the actual problems.
Well, it's like when Alex starts talking about child trafficking and shit right. like that. Like, that's a serious issue that
or,
we should talk about.
I mean, Tommy Robinson
yeah,
is a
absolutely.
Perfect example of that.
Yeah.
Now, Jordan, you might remember how I told you that Leo Zagami used to go by the name Leo Young, and that until 2006 or so, when he decided to turn on the Illuminati, he'd been a DJ.
Yes.
Well, funny story about that.
He's a good DJ?
MusicLib.org still has a profile up for Leo Young.
Oh,
and
fuck,
man,
yes.
Oh, man, there is so much more to Leo Zagami than meets the eye.
Are we going to listen to some more music?
I don't know. According to his music biography, Leo began DJing on a church radio station at the age of 13. By 1987, at the age of 17, Leo had taken his DJ skills to London, where he was a fixture at a bar called Legends, which, according to his bio, is a, quote, celeb haunt. By 1988, he claims he'd reached the national finals in the prestigious DMC DJ Championships. This very well may be true. I can't find a list of that year's finalists for the Italian competition, so all I can say with certainty is that he didn't win. The experience at that contest, however, encouraged him to get more involved with the rave scene, where he spent the next decade. He claims he is, quote, recognized as the man responsible for organizing Italy's first rave in Rome in 1989. While I'm not positive that history bears out that Leo Zagami organized the first rave in Italy, he's not making up that he was involved. I found a mention of him in an essay posted on the Red Bull Music Academy's website titled, quote, The Rise and Fall of Roman Techno, 1988 to 1994. While there isn't much about him in the article, this is what is said. Quote, for all the excitement amongst these young DJs, and those who history has forgotten, such as the notoriously wild Leo Young, around acid house, techno, and the soon-to-emerge hardcore breakbeat scene, the vast majority of Roman club owners and party promoters were less enthusiastic. This is an article about the rave scene, which centered more or less around drug use, and Leo Zagami is described as, quote, notoriously wild. The mind reels at what he must have been up to in order to get that reputation.
Yeah, no shit. So if he had done a few less drugs, maybe he could have been Giorgio instead of fucking Jesus.
An article about him on familyhouse.net gives some hint about that notoriously wild reputation. Quote, Leo is generally considered to be as mad as an upside-down clown, renowned for a reckless penchant for ludicrous quaffering, questionable neo-pagan mystical interests, threatening verbal behavior, and convincingly delivered allusions to a bloodline of eccentric castle-dwelling Italian aristocrats. It seems like that was always kind of a part of his personality, where he just ramble about nonsense. Make no mistake about it, Leo Zagami, then known as Leo Young, was an active member of the house music scene in the late 80s, early 90s in Italy. He held a three-day rave called L'Impero dei Sensi in 1989. Then by 1991, he was running a weekly club night called Uona in Rome. He did a 12-hour DJ set at a Berlin venue called Tracer. And he was said to be a fixture there between 1995 and 1996. He claims he was the first DJ ever to play at the Bolshoi Theater in Moscow, which I'm not sure is true.
Yeah.
He claims that he gave Prodigy their first gig outside of the UK, which probably isn't true, but might be.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah. It's absolutely crazy that Leo Zagami was a fucking rave DJ. But his bio for his DJ life kind of undercuts a lot of the claims that he makes about his current hustle now. For one, consider this line talking about how much he admires his grandmother. Quote, not only did she get Leo his first international DJ residency, but she also financed him going to learn more about recording by becoming a student of the famous London production duo Double Trouble. If he was Illuminati royalty and all that, it doesn't seem like he'd make a specific point of his grandmother paying for him to study with some London DJs. That seems kind of incongruous.
That's the first thing that every Illuminati child is taught.
Say it's your grandmother.
Yeah.
Where'd the money come from, Grandma?
Yep.
The next line is even weirder, though, talking about how when things were going well for him in London, quote, unfortunately, he had to go back to Italy, where at the time you had to do an obligatory year of bollocks in the military before getting your passport back. If he was a member of the ruling elite bloodline and the prince of the Illuminati, you'd think they'd easily be able to get him out of something that trivial if it interfered so drastically with his life.
Say he has a bone spur, for fuck's sake.
Curious in its absence from this long-winded and very clearly self-written bio, which was penned in 2006, absent is any mention of him being a 33rd-degree Mason, any mention of any involvement with secret societies at all, any mention of the Illuminati, none of that is in there. The only time the Vatican even comes up is when he says that, quote, the Vatican boys weren't happy with him hosting a rave in an old church. If I'm being honest with you, I don't know what to make of all this. My mind goes back and forth between thinking that his luck had run out with the club scene between 2006 and 2007, and it wasn't paying the bills anymore, so he decided to rebrand. But then I also think it's possible that maybe he did way too many drugs, and he started to believe his own bullshit.
Yeah.
With the information available, there's no way to tell. All I can say is that Leo Zagami is low-key one of the most interesting people who's ever been on an episode of InfoWars, and all of the things that make him interesting are literally never brought up in any of his appearances.
This is insane.
Yes.
God, that means that there was a time in Leo Zagami's life where I would have totally wanted to hang out with him and listen to everything he had to say.
Absolutely.
Until he did a little too much coke and I was bored.
Or, yeah, I mean, who knows?
Yeah.
And now, let us all enjoy some of Leo Zagami's music. Excuse me. Leo Young's music.
Aha.
This song, this little sample is from, I cannot stop listening to this song. It's called DJ Pimp and the Scarlet Woman.
I preach, my dear friends, you're about to receive on John Barleycorn, nicotine, and the temptations. I preach, my dear friends, you're...
Holy shit, this is actually pretty good. And he's adding layers after every break? This is not bad, Dan.
Yeah, it just goes on like that for a while. We don't have to listen to all 4 minutes of it. But
when,
like,
was that recorded?
I don't know, but it was a while back.
Yeah.
Honestly, I've listened to a bit of his music, and it's legitimately not bad.
Yeah, no.
Especially compared to music put out by other people we talk about, like Larry Nichols or Kerry Cassidy.
Right.
Like, he has some skill.
Yeah, no, I was interested to know who, when the Chemical Brothers, dropped their, first tracks.
Just a few months back, New Interplanetary Melodies, an Italian record label, released the fourth in their series of artist spotlight mixes. And it was about, quote, the legendary Leo Young. I've listened to the whole thing, and it's pretty serviceable. I'm not sure any of it reaches the level of being a hit, but none of it is stuff that if you heard in the clubs, particularly like in the early 90s, you'd be yelling for them to turn off.
Yeah.
Leo Zagami is still an active DJ and still does gigs.
Are you and you're talking about now? Like,
oh, yeah.
Now. Like,
oh, yeah.
Now.
Yeah.
Like, he's
his,
on
his
Info
wife
Wars.
Posted a video of him on her YouTube channel 4 months ago promoting a gig in Russia.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
So, Dan?
Isn't this fascinating?
That is crazy.
Yeah, Leo Zagami's nuts. When I stumbled into some of this stuff, like when I was looking into his history, all the stuff about like, wait a second, you claim that you secretly infiltrated Islam and all this stuff. Like, I'm like, this is a fascinating story. And I'm like, hours into this rabbit hole. And then I'm like, wait a second. He claimed he's a DJ. Is there any music available with that? And I'd start looking into it. I'm like, oh, he's not making that up. It was just the craziest roller coaster ride to go down.
That is bananas.
Yeah.
He is a ridiculously interesting figure whenever he's talking about his real life.
Mm.
And he's so boring when he's talking about the fake one.
He's interesting when I'm talking about his real life.
Fair.
I'm not positive that I've ever heard him talk about his real life.
That's 100% fair.
Yeah. So now let's get back to Alex and Leo on InfoWars in present day. You can kind of tell that now Leo is into an anti-communist scam.
Yeah.
That's kind of the place he serves, within Alex is shit.
I mean, we are in a situation whereby, the left wing has lost the plot and wants to transform the United States of America in a socialist / communist country. This is not America, used to say a song back in the days by, I remember, Dave Bowie and Pat Metheny. Definitely, this is not America. The way it was born.
Okay.
And also, I added some tracks to Beverly Hills Cop 2.
Also, I am Jesus.
Yeah, by the way.
And I did 9/11.
Don't talk about that too much anymore, but, you know, so what are you going to do?
Leo is on the show, and also Robert Barnes shows up. And Alex is clearly defensive about criticisms that Robert Barnes is on the show all the fucking time.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
Is he? Are there a lot
it's
of
certainly
people?
Certainly something that we've brought up.
Are there a lot
of times.
People criticizing him for that? Or is it just a very small amount?
I don't know. It is yet another instance of him responding to criticisms we've made. Whether or not he's responding to us or not, it is interesting because he's a little defensive.
You know, a lot of folks have asked me, man, Robert Barnes is like on the show every week, and like 1 week out of the month, he's in Austin. Yeah, he's our chief legal counsel, but that's not why Bob's here all the time. He likes coming on the show, and I like Bob. He's my buddy. He's a friendly, funny guy.
He's not, Alex.
Question answered. He's a funny guy, and he's Alex's buddy.
He's not your buddy, Alex.
Ooh.
God, Alex just doesn't know who his friends are.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, he got in with the wrong crowd. Now he's got Barnes around.
Yep, fucking Barnes. So in this next clip, Leo expresses that he wants to become an American and explains why.
I want to become American because Donald J. Trump is the president. If it was another president, I would probably renounce to this idea. But the fact that Donald J. Trump is the president forced me to become American because he's the only president in the world that is opposing globalism. You understand, Alex? He's the only one.
What about Putin?
Yeah.
What about Orban? What about
right? Like, also,
what about all the other? What about Bolsonaro? Like, what about all these other presidents that you keep talking about being like the globalist, anti-globalist allies around the world? What the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah,
Trump's the only one. And also, like, where the fuck does this fit into your Holy Roman Empire?
Right.
Why do you want to become an American because Trump is president when you clearly have designs of world domination?
Also, Neo-Leo, if you become an American, you realize that Trump doesn't stay president forever. Like, there's going to be a different president.
I think that they think he might.
Yeah, I think they do, too.
Also,
I don't think
Leo could become a citizen.
You don't think so?
Well,
he did do 9/11.
That's going to be a problem.
That's going to be an issue.
I don't think that naturalization would be like, well, you know, we kind of get why you did it.
After 2012, we figured it out.
Weird for 11 years, but then we got it.
Yeah,
like, all
okay.
I think he'd have a more difficult time than he imagines.
Yeah, yeah.
So in this next clip, Alex just gets back to his Trump did an exorcism thing.
Sure.
And
how's Leo feel about that?
Loves it.
We have become exceptionally evil in some respects because with great power comes great responsibility. As Lord Acton said, power tends to corrupt. Absolute power corrupts absolutely. So we've had great power, and so evil's come and tried to take over. So now we're a paradox of incredible good, innovation, and love, but also incredible evil. And there's a fight now over the soul of America. And Trump, I see this as a ritual, an exorcism of the evil, of the hate of the left, and Trump knows it's a ritual. Melania knows it's a ritual. And as I sat there last night on that HDTV watching her with tears in her eyes, Trump with tears in his eyes, I knew my gut was always right. The enemy's response tells you Trump's good, but this was a magic moment. We'll come back to you, Robert Barnes.
So Barnes is sitting there, too. You catch that quote at the beginning?
Yeah.
Lord
Acton. The one from Spider-Man?
Yeah. Lord Acton didn't say, with great power comes great responsibility.
Oh, he did?
Uncle Ben did.
Yeah.
I think Alex realized in the middle of the quote that it was a Spider-Man quote.
Right.
And he tried to save it by throwing in another quote about power afterwards
that wasn't related
to what he was already saying.
Yeah.
Sure, Lord Acton did say that.
I wonder how he felt about Far From Home. I imagine he saw that recently.
I bet he was furious.
Yeah.
Lord Acton did say that line about power corrupting, but most people don't know too much more about the guy. For instance, did you know that though he was a British politician, he was super into the Confederacy during the American Civil War?
I did not know that.
But don't worry. He was definitely against slavery. He just thought that the Union, quote, treated the slave owner as an enemy, and they've used the slave as an instrument for his destruction.
Yeah, cool. Also, I'm cool with that.
Also, did you know that Lord Acton was basically a theocrat? He literally said, quote, political rights proceed directly from religious duties, and I hold this to be the basis for liberalism.
So he would have loved Neo-Leo Zagami.
Probably. What I'm getting at is Lord Acton sucks, and Alex only quoted him because what he wanted to say was a Spider-Man quote,
right.
And he didn't want to look stupid in front of Barnes and Leo Zagami, which on its own is incredibly sad.
Yeah, that is sad.
That is a bummer.
Barnes is a shitty, terrible, dumb lawyer, and Leo Zagami thinks he's Jesus.
And you're 9/11.
Like, and you're like, I mean, I'm giving out Spider-Man quotes. I think that would have made, if he had leaned into a Spider-Man quote, I would have considered him the smartest man there.
Yeah. So you asked what Leo Zagami thinks about this Christian exorcism ritual thing, and actually we find out what he thinks in this next clip.
And you're also an expert on the occult. You're a Christian, but explain. Trump no doubt did a huge Christian ritual yesterday.
Absolutely. I mean, it's an egregore. Egregore means a thought form. You put together many people thinking the same thing, you obtain a thought form, and that is incredibly powerful. So yes,
this was highest level magic.
Absolutely.
Not from an occult perspective.
No.
The devil tries to twist God's systems and put names on it.
Listen, even churches are egregore.
This is silly. This is completely fucking silly. Quite frankly, just like take a step back. They're talking about Trump conducting a magic ritual.
Yes.
Like this is what they're about now.
Right.
This is a guy who claims that he, I know he reads all the white papers and like, oh, I'm not into aliens and UFOs and stuff. Like that was his whole branding back in the day. Now Trump did a magic ritual.
Yeah.
And it's not like evil magic.
No.
It's an egregore.
It's an egregore.
Shout out to Robert Evans over at Behind the Bastards who loves egregore. So egregore is a word that was invented by the French poet Victor Hugo in his book The Legend of the Ages. It's a faulty transliteration of the Greek word egregoros, which loosely translates to watcher. Just because it's close to a Greek word, though, don't be mistaken. It was a fake word created by Victor Hugo.
Yeah.
Since the word's creation, it's been co-opted by a ton of occult weirdos, including Helena Blavatsky and the Theosophical Society, and it's been adopted into all their mythologies. It's the same thing with Lovecraft creating the fictional book The Necronomicon, when then a ton of real-world weirdos pretend it's a real book and a central part of their occult shenanigans.
Yeah, sure, of course.
There's a number of definitions out there for what counts as an egregore, but the general rule is that it's a thought form that's brought into existence by the thoughts of a group of people. So, for instance, if you want to take it on a benign and very basic level, Santa Claus is an egregore. For the most part, the New Age and occult world's take on it is basically just dressed-up versions of basic self-help ideas, basically just artistic expressions used to warn people not to let negative thoughts consume them, lest they manifest those negative thoughts.
Sure, like the god of guilt at the end of The Long Dark Tea Time of the Soul.
Sure. You have, like, tulpas that are created individually, and then egregores are created as a group.
Gotcha.
The two different kinds of thought forms.
And where do elementals and sex magic come in?
They don't come into it.
What?
Yet.
They're a boring cult.
So that's sort of the what you might call the mainline version of New Agey and occult nonsense. Mm-hmm. But that's not how everyone understands egregores. I found an interesting post about egregores on the blog of Nazi-friendly and explicitly white supremacist radio show Red Ice Radio, where the author discusses how a listener named George had told him about a conversation he had had with a, quote, heiress of a rich Jewish banking family who was not the Rothschilds, although her family dwelled in a palace neighboring the Rothschilds.
Oh, that's... Like, how close do they neighbor? Are they
real,
like,
close? Okay. I think you can already tell.
Is it like a duplex?
I think you can tell this is not going to be good.
It doesn't sound good.
Quote, Leah was one of my classmates at the Geneva University, where I was studying psychology. She was an attractive blue-eyed blonde lady. As she was wearing a Star of David, I asked if she was a believer. She answered yes and no, and then added she believed in a God who the Jews were, a God of the Jews who was serving the Jews rather than served by them. I immediately asked whether she was speaking of an egregore. Her only response was yes, and she broke that conversation. Never again did we mention the subject.
Also, she told Osama to do 9/11.
The article goes on to suggest that it's very possible that the elite Jews of the past created an egregore which serves them, which explains their world domination. The article says, quote, this egregore is Lucifer, and elite Jews have made him the master meme of the New World Order. The elite Jews are the Communist Capitalist International. My friend, you change a couple of words in that sentence, and you got yourself an Alex Jones quote.
Oh, yeah. So that dude thinks that the ancient Jews got a genie to do their bidding for
Well, if it was, the jinns come out of a different culture, so.
No, I know. I was doing specifically genie and not gin. Mm-hmm. You know, I was doing the Americanized, like,
look, whatever
egregore, if you will, Dan.
You have to.
Yeah.
you can't deviate off the path because gin and genie probably have different connotations than
exactly.
Egregore.
Yeah.
I have to say I strongly disagree with everything in that article, but I do admit that it is swinging for the fences. Listen to this amazing rationalization for being a bigot. Quote, it doesn't take a genius to recognize this egregore is the cause of anti-Semitism.
Stop there, sir.
Jewish leaders use anti-Semitism to manipulate Jews who are taught that they are reviled for no reason. You see, Jordan, anti-Semites don't hate Jews for no reason. It's just that they instinctually can sense the egregore, which is what they're really against. That is impressive rationalization.
Wow. Wow. I mean, it does not take a genius. In fact, it explicitly excludes a genius believing this shit.
So, you know what's weird about this blog post, other than the content?
It was written by Leo Zagami.
I found an identical post
to
this on David Duke's website. A closer look revealed that this article wasn't actually written by someone who worked for Red Ice. It was a reposting of an article that was originally posted on the website of a guy named Henry Macau, with a byline on it for Henry Macau, Ph.D. His PhD is apparently in literature, so it's definitely a good credential for him to tout when publishing his rewriting of early Jewish history.
Yeah.
Glimpsing around Macau's site, you get a pretty good sense of what he's all about. His most recent post was, quote, Jews use immigration to divide and conquer. A quick look through his archives shows the following headlines from pretty recently. Quote, can a Jew identify with whites?
Can they?
Quote, events prove protocols of Zion authentic.
That doesn't sound right.
Quote, why do Jews stage hate crimes?
You might be a redneck?
Quote, anti-Semitism is often justified.
No, I don't even have anything funny to say to that one.
And quote, I have been shut out of Twitter for a week. I wonder why.
Nice punch.
Yeah. So Henry Macau runs a clearly deeply anti-Semitic website where he wrote an article in 2007 arguing that the Jewish God is an egregore that was caused to be created to destroy non-Jews, which was then widely circulated on very high-profile anti-Semitic websites and media outlets like Red Ice, David Duke's website. But why do I bring all this up? It can't just be because I love saying egregore, even though I do.
And everybody does.
Yeah. In 2008, when Leo Zagami's wife left him after he went on Project Camelot, Leo reached out to Carrie to prove that he knew about that alleged Norwegian politician who had contacted her warning about Planet X. He was clearly looking for a rebooking on the show. As evidence of his claims that he knew this Norwegian politician, he provided two letters that he'd written and sent to two friends wherein he'd mentioned to them that he knew the politician. One of those two people was Henry Macau. I'll read to you now from his letter from March 13th, 2008, which I'll remind you is after Macau wrote his article accusing the Jewish religion of being based on a communist egregore named Lucifer. Leo begins his letter, quote, "Dear Henry, thank you for your continuous support, and please forgive me if I could not reply earlier. The letter is mostly about how his wife was secretly working for the Illuminati, and that's why she left him, and then awkwardly shoehorned into it are a couple references to this Norwegian politician. The content of the message is less important than the clear, friendly tone of it. He refers to Henry as my friend and dear Henry multiple times, and he ends the letter, fraternally yours. Leo Zagami is listed as a source or reference in no less than 15 articles on Henry's website, dating back to 2007. The two men have a long-standing relationship, and let me put it simply, egregore is not a commonly used word, and Henry seems to use it in one specific way. Here are the headlines that come up when you search Henry Mackow's website for the word egregore. Quote, Purim, Jews celebrate the slaughter of their opponents. Quote, Jewish shakedown of Poland de-emancipates Jews. Quote, Jews, the unloved people. And then here's another one. Quote, Leo Zagami, December 12, 2012 starts 7 years of tribulation. That article is just bullet points of a Skype conversation that Henry had with Leo, and it includes this passage. Quote, Leo mentioned the Kabbalist concept of the egregore. Then it says in parentheses, see Mackow, the god that serves elite Jews, with a hyperlink to Henry Mackow's article about how they created an egregore. All this is enough to be really fucking suspicious. But to add a little icing to the cake, I should tell you that Project Camelot was not the first high-profile interview that Leo Zagami did in his anti-Illuminati career. In December 2006, he appeared as a guest on Red Ice Radio, the white supremacist show that reposted Henry Mackow's article about the Jewish God being an egregore, which justifies anti-Semitism. This, Jordan, is what you call way too many red flags.
Yeah.
Oh, and remember that blog that about Leo's wife leaving him that I mentioned earlier and told you to remember? The one that was written by a personal friend of his? That one that was called Kentroversy Papers, if you recall? That blog was written by a guy named Kent Daniel Bentkowski. Kent passed away in August 2008, and his blog is way too difficult to navigate, so I don't really know too much about what he's all about.
Yeah.
But if you search for his name, the first thing that comes up in a Google search is a eulogy post for him on the website of, you guessed it, Red Ice Radio. Kent had been a guest on their show at least 10 times, which tells me about all you need to know about what he's about. And before anybody comes out, you know, it's like, hey, Dan, you're giving Red Ice a really unfair shake, you know, demonizing them. Here's a little clip of some of their work.
They want you, straight white guy, destitute, suffering, and then dead. They want your daughters brainwashed to disown you and your sons groveling at the feet of anti-whites. You know who they is.
You know who they is. Strangely, in that video, she doesn't explain who they is.
She doesn't?
She's just left to be like a, you know who we're talking about.
Really? Do
yeah.
I?
Yeah, you do.
I kind of do, don't
yeah,
I?
Yeah, you kind of do.
Isn't that an issue?
Yeah. So I think that Leo, even on top of all of the interesting aspects of his life, is clearly involved with a lot of people who have, oh, shall we say, deeply anti-Semitic worldviews that they perpetuate. He's a dear friend of Henry Mackow's from way back. I don't think there's any conclusion you can draw other than some of that stuff is probably in his worldview. When he talks about egregores on Alex's show, it's clearly, it exists in the context of Henry Mackow and the egregore accusation of the Jewish God being a creation out of the minds of elite Jews of the past in order to subjugate the world.
You know, it makes so much sense. I'd be fine with it if they weren't fucking directly contributing and expanding the issue. But of course these people get conned nonstop. You have to be really, really stupid to believe any of this shit.
Well, Alex is being conned right now.
Exactly. Yeah. And if it was just Nigerian scams that they all got, like if all the dumb people who are...
It's all just financial.
Yeah. I'd be totally fine with that. The problem is they're getting conned and then making more people fucking shitty.
Right,
you know?
Right. It's a con that in much the same way burning coal releases gases that are destructive.
Yeah.
Burning this sort of coal, this sort of con.
Yeah.
The byproduct that pollutes is that other people become much more stupidly hateful.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is probably a big part of what makes it so objectionable.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's not the people getting conned.
No.
They can, like, no, I would be fine with conning these people as long as I wasn't hurting anybody. Well,
but that's why,
you know,
that's why the confidence man is such an archetype in American history. There's something kind of enjoyable about watching someone pull off like a really good scam.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So there's not...
Especially when it's against a rich person, right, or a bigot or, yeah, somebody like that. And you're like, they totally have it coming. I don't want them to
Robin
have their
Hood
money.
Is a hero for a reason.
Yeah,
or,
yeah,
he's,
yeah,
seen as a hero for a reason.
Absolutely.
Yeah, there's nothing, like, there's nothing intrinsically wrong with when you're directing it in the right places to a scam.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, the part that's a problem is everything else.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
So, in this next clip, I think this is Barnes, says some stupid shit. What a shock.
So there was all this efforts to sort of demonize America, and you get a sense for how important American history, American freedom, American liberty is all connected together. That's the reason why the president had that ritualistic celebration yesterday, did so celebrating our military prowess, did so celebrating the spirit of our history, did so by celebrating all of the heroes and patriots over time who've done extraordinary things to keep the light of liberty alive. And not only here in America, but around the world, because it's America that led the world. Every other democratic country postdates the American Revolution in any meaningful manner.
You're so fucking stupid, Barnes. You're so goddamn fucking stupid. You're so fucking stupid.
It's not even close to
not even close accurate. To true.
But you know what's kind of interesting? I realize that, like, I think Barnes breathes in really loudly in, uh-huh, between every dead space so Alex can't interrupt him. I think that he's listened to enough of Alex's,
yeah,
because I've listened to a bunch of his appearances.
Yeah.
And I never hear Alex interrupt him. And it's either a function of subservience, like Alex knows that Barnes has got something.
Something, yeah.
Or it's like he's so, right, Alex doesn't have a spot to, right, to jump in. So it would be way ruder for him to interrupt.
Man, if I were Alex, I would first recognize that Barnes wasn't my buddy.
No.
And second, recognize that
Barnes
has
designs.
No matter how much I like Barnes, but if my lawyer was sitting in between two people saying that Trump just exercised literally,
yeah,
using magic,
yeah, yeah, yeah,
literally, and I didn't say anything, I'm a bad lawyer.
Yeah, and if you join in on it.
Yeah.
Because he does.
Exactly. Now, he specifically said ritualistic and celebrating military prowess because he was like, I'm not going to out and out sign off
no,
on...
No, he does.
Oh, he really does?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. He signs off on the exorcism bullshit.
Really?
Yeah. But that's also because I think he doesn't want to be a lawyer anymore. I think that there's probably a piece of it that I've expressed that, like, he wants to be the go-to lawyer for, dumb shitheads settling lawsuits.
Right,
because
that's
a cakewalk.
Yeah.
But he'd also probably rather transition into this, pundit role.
Yeah.
Because that's even easier.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like, Napolitano
and
is so much happier not to work for a living.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
And, I mean, say what you want about it. Barnes is decent at this.
Yeah, no, he's not bad.
He can rattle off shit. That breathing has gotta stop.
Yeah.
But, like, the rest of it, he's serviceable in a propaganda role. He could hang with the Owen Schroyers and David Knights of the world
easily. Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
If he wanted to make that sort of a transition, I think that's what he's working towards.
It does seem like it.
So in this next clip, Leo Zagami talks about how he recently went to a Walmart and he's bummed out about something.
That the whole of the Hollywood apparatus still worships all this royal family. And every time I go in any Walmart or any, I see all these newspapers and they only talk about the British royal families. How is this possible? Why don't you talk about the beautiful family Donald Trump had?
So,
which one, buddy?
Hey, how low priority are your problems? You're going to Walmart and you're mad about what's in tabloid covers?
Yep.
What are you doing?
Yep.
What is the point?
What do you Dan?
Tabloids still have Princess Di conspiracy theories on the cover. Ooh.
Dan, WWJD. What would Jesus be doing at a Walmart? Complaining about tabloids.
Yeah, perhaps.
Obvious.
So in this next clip, man, this just isn't good. This is just bad.
Well, I mean, the reason why InfoWars is targeted is for the same reason that all these sort of anti-American activities are taking place by people like Congressman Castro, by people like Congresswoman Omar, by people like AOC. It's people who really don't love and believe in America because it's the greatest resistance to the efforts that they're trying to do. So InfoWars is America. InfoWars is Americana. InfoWars is Independence Day. InfoWars is July 4th because it reflects and represents Americana at its core, not just protects it, defends it, as it does on a day-to-day basis.
So, you know, Julian Castro, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and Ilhan Omar, they're all anti-Americans who don't love this country and actually working against the country. Now, Robert Barnes, Alex Jones, Caitlin Bennett, they're all what America is really about. And they're the ones protecting the real America.
So
fully,
let me ask fully, you a
fully
question.
There's some distinguishable
is there certain
trait.
Things that both groups share that are different from each other?
I, if there were something really easily distinguishable to tell between the two groups,
yeah.
Like, I think that would probably make what you're saying kind of overt.
Yeah.
I think it,
So, let me ask you a question. InfoWars.
Right.
All right. Is Americana.
They are the 4th of July.
Right.
They are the American flag.
Right.
They are, which, by the way, is authoritarian propaganda 101.
Yeah, no shit.
That sort of shit.
That's
you're like,
really
we
easy.
Are the flag.
Yeah, exactly. Let me equate what I say with the entire country's symbol.
And the only right version of patriotism.
Uh-huh.
Hey, guys. Good job.
Yeah. It does seem like you should be disqualified from calling yourself Americana if you don't know American history at all.
That is, I mean, yeah, it is a problem. It's definitely.
You know, because you're saying we are the 4th of July, we are Americana, but you don't know what those things are. You're
right.
Making them up.
Right.
No.
You
it's, know.
It's just taking xenophobia, racism, hierarchical structures that are created around superficial characteristics.
Yeah. In a certain sense, that is Americana and who we are.
Right, but yeah. It's definitely something that there's been a trend away from.
Yeah.
Whereas they believe it's what it's all about.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like it fits within our ideals,
mm-hmm.
or at least the ideals set forth by those brilliant founding fathers mm-hmm. on 1812, 1944, when they wrote the Declaration of...
You know, Leo Zagami signed that Declaration of Independence.
Did he?
He did.
No shit. Wait, hold on, real quick question. Does he think that he is a reincarnated Jesus or of the bloodline of Jesus?
Because it's not clear, but he literally said he is Jesus and
yeah.
he is the Messiah.
Yeah, and he did
and
say
he's
that
also
it...
from the bloodline.
Right.
So it's all of them.
Okay.
So Barnes, like I said, I think he's strategically breathing in order to make it so Alex can't interrupt him.
Right, which is a smart move on his part.
Right, gets you much more time to get your points out.
For sure.
But in this next clip, I think he shows his cards in terms of like, really wanting to stay coming on the show. Listen to this. This is pro shit. Barnes does his homework.
President Trump talked about America forever, no matter what. And I believe what he meant was the spirit of America will be here forever. They can't crush it. They can't kill it. They can't destroy it. They can't wipe it out. Just as the idea of InfoWars will be here forever. They Oof. Can't crush it. They can't destroy it because the audience continues to support it, because the audience continues to believe in it, because the audience keeps it alive
oh.
by doing things like going to InfoWarsStore.com and
no.
supporting it in any and every possible way they can.
That's such
oh.
a smoother ad pivot.
Wow.
That is next
that
level.
That is good.
You have to like imagine Alex was sitting there like,
yeah.
I have, my eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord. Start singing the battle hymn of the Republic.
God, that's like the reverse of what a caller does when they open up with
yeah.
like, I do all the, I love taking your products and all that shit.
Yeah.
God.
I mean, that's one that I, like when I was listening, I didn't even see it coming.
Yeah.
Like, he snuck it in.
That was smooth as shit.
Yeah. So I think Barnes.
Unapologetically.
Barnes is knocking it out of the park.
Good work, Barnes.
So, Alex, I mean, he's had a day here. He's drank some champagne. He's hung out with Jesus who did 9/11.
Right.
Also club DJ.
And Barnes, who's trying to single white female him right now.
There's a lot of psychodrama
There's
going
a lot
on in this
going
studio.
On today.
A lot of people coming at him with a lot of different angles. It's pretty impressive. If I were him, I'd need a drink too.
There are
honestly.
A lot of spinning plates, yeah.
Yeah. So here's how he ends up finishing up the show.
I'll be back this Sunday, 4 to 6 p.m. I'll be back tomorrow at noon.
for at least a two-hour special broadcast. And I think I'm doing more tonight. In fact, I'm just doing 20 hours this weekend. We're not giving up. We're dug in and we're winning. But we're going to fight even harder now to ensure that victory.
All right. All sure. right. Go on. Go do your 24 hours on air.
You
whatever.
Need some money.
Yeah. So, I mean, we come to the end of this, and I will say that the difference between this episode and other present-day episodes, I think, well, first of all, the Leo Zagami of it all, but...
Perfect. Yeah. Perfect. That story, we could have just done that story, and I would have been like, this episode was amazing.
The thing is, like, I think in the present day, I recognize the stakes of the things he's saying. And they become so serious that I allow Alex to really guide what I need to cover. Whereas I approach this episode, since the Trump is doing an exorcism in his 4th of July speech is so goddamn stupid.
Right.
That I just allowed myself to be like, now what's interesting to me here? How much do I know about Leo Zagami?
Yeah.
And it led me down these roads that are far less, I mean, they're disturbing in some
right.
ways, but they're less, awful. I think I need to carry that with me in the future. I think it's a lesson learned of, you know, don't shy away from the important stuff when Alex is being a dick about it, but also trust that there's a better story to be told somewhere else than where Alex is pointing.
Right. Cause if, I mean, at this point, if we're doing another episode on, him being a complete and utter bigot who wants to start another civil war,
right.
it's
I mean,
like,
point
well, everybody already knows. Yeah.
Yeah. That's been,
you want to kill people. So there you go.
But I think there is some value to, keeping an eye on that
for
as
sure.
it escalates. But yeah, I think it's far more important to trust my instincts to know where something interesting could be.
I agree.
And find it.
Not least of which because you did not begin this episode with your usual exhortation of, you know, I hate being in the present day.
I mean, there's still parts of it that I hate.
Right, of course.
But man, oh man.
Oh.
Leo Zagami.
Zagami, what is going on?
Crazy stuff.
What a life.
Yeah.
That is so much fun.
Mm-hmm. You know, if he wasn't mixed up with people trying to rationalize anti-Semitism and he didn't have complete, real dicey, dubious history in his personal life, you almost think, God, I want to talk to that guy.
I know, right?
But I do not.
Now, I want to talk to that guy at the right point in his life.
That
definitely not
might
now.
Have been 88.
That might have been 88.
And that might have been too late.
It was probably too late.
He already was, quote, notoriously wild.
Yeah, but that would have been fun.
Yeah, maybe. So we'll be back on Wednesday with another episode. But until then, we have a website.
It is, we do. It's knowledgefight.com.
That's correct. We're also on Twitter.
We are at knowledge_fight and at GoToBedJordan.
Also, people can contact you if they want more details. You're going to be at Zany's all this month.
Yes, I will be Tuesday through Sunday for the next 3 weeks.
You're going to be hosting
the
month of July. Mm-hmm. So people can reach out to you on Twitter if they want more information.
Yeah, please do.
Showtimes and such.
Yeah.
Also, we're on Facebook.
We are. You can download our podcast. You could go to iTunes.
Yep.
You could go to, your nearest, Mariano's. They often play that as a
Muzak.
Yeah. They put that in the speakers there. So
really
people walking around.
The scene.
I know. It's changed things a lot.
Yeah. A lot more people are going to the bar at Mariano's now. But yeah.
Yeah. Other than that, let's see. Can't do Zagami because, you know.
Lord knows.
He did 9/11.
Yeah. I forgot about that part of it.
Yeah.
Uncle Ben?
Uncle Ben is definitely not killed.
That's not good. But it'll have to do.
Yep.
Uncle Ben from Spider-Man. Never killed anybody, but one guy who technically probably has is Alex Jones.
Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan. I love your work.
I love you.